recording everybody, just so you know. Good evening, I'll get the meeting started. I ask that we all rise for the pledge of the flag.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic which stands one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Miller, please call the roll.
Mr. Callahan.
Present.
Ms. Gracie Smith.
Present.
Ms. Quintec.
Present.
Ms. Laird.
Present.
Ms. Leon.
Present.
Ms. Whitnell.
Present.
And Mrs. Blum.
Present. Thank you, Mr. Miller. I will note that our city council solicitor, Attorney Stewart, is joining us remote, as you see, to advise on any solicitor business this evening.
President Ford, I'd like to make a motion to move new business to the end of the agenda.
All right. Councilwoman Leon makes a motion to move new business tonight to the very end of the agenda. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Councilwoman Wilhelm. Discussion?
I'd just like to know the reasoning behind it.
My reasoning is that there was a good discussion at the Finance Committee meeting, so I'd like to dig into that to get through council agenda and then whatever new business council might have be at the end of the agenda so we can get to council business first.
My only concern is just that people, usually with new business, people in the audience are here and then we could address their issues during new business, so I hate to have them have to wait till the end of the meeting for that to occur.
Understood.
That's my only concern.
Mr. Callahan?
It's obviously an important topic to you, correct? So why not have it at the beginning of the meeting when everybody's here still instead of at the end when they all leave and at the end of the meeting when everybody tunes out on whoever's watching? Why don't we want to do it at the beginning so we can get it out of the way?
Well, I think it's I think you're thinking the inverse because the Finance Committee, we would be getting to that first. And then if, like, public discussion, whatever we would bring up would be at the end. So, like, if we wanted to bring up something about streets or sidewalks or whatever's happening on South Side, that would be under new business as opposed to the council agenda.
Yeah, I thought you said you want to talk about the Finance Committee, you know?
Yeah, I just want to get to the council agenda first and then whatever new business council might have would just be at the end of the agenda.
Right. I would prefer to do it while everybody's here instead of at the end of the meeting when people leave. So that's just my opinion.
Understood. We'll vote on it. Anything else?
The only thing I'm saying is it's not at the end of the meeting, but halfway through the Finance Committee is on the agenda. So can it be spoken of at that time?
So I would say that's
just an option.
Yeah,
I think that was my point. Yeah.
It's just so the Finance Committee is just a report, as we have always. I am aware the Finance Committee meeting went a couple hours long, which is atypical. And if discussion is going to continue at that length this evening, I'd be fine with having the open floor at the end of the meeting for whatever discussions council chooses to have. But again, the motion on the floor right now is to move new business to the very end of the meeting. Is there any other discussion about that? Mr. Callahan?
I'd like to make an amendment to it. If she wants to talk about the Finance Committee, I would prefer that we talk about it when the Finance Committee meeting is reported on at 7C when Ms. Gramsci Smith, Finance Committee.
So what is your motion? So 7C is already on the agenda.
Yes. So she wants. Maybe I misunderstood. Do you want to move it to the end of the very end of the meeting?
No, I'm sorry. Maybe I wasn't clear. I want to move the part where council has the floor and we can go on for quite some time. I just want to move that to the end of the agenda so we can get to council business that's on the agenda first. So in case that, like, which includes the Finance Committee, we would run through the agenda as normal. The only portion that would be moved is council's new business. That's it.
So, agenda item 5, new business, will be moved to after the last resolution. Am I understanding that correctly, Council?
Yeah, and nothing else on the agenda would change, so we would discuss everything as it comes up.
Understood. Mr. Callahan, do you want to amend or withdraw your motion?
I don't know
what it was.
I will withdraw it as far as the finance part. I mean, if she's okay with discussing the Finance Committee meeting and the issues that were brought up there at finance, fine. But new business should be at new business, and this is why we have it here. I think you're aware of some things that might be spoken of tonight, and
this is why you want to move it to the very end of the meeting when no one's around, or hopefully, I mean, I don't know what.
We're not going to assign motives.
I'm just going to say it's very strange. This has never been done. Never. And to make these people stay here all night to hear what's going to be discussed tonight, because you know what's coming on, and that's why you did this.
So, no, Mr. Callahan, I'm going to ask you not to assign motive, because I ask everybody not to assign motive.
I'm not going to assign you.
You could.
I'm going to assume.
So.
I'm going to assume that you're aware of things that are going to be discussed tonight, which are very pertinent and real. And I think it's important that everybody here hears it and not make them hang out to the end of the night to hear it, especially the people that are online.
I mean, I think that I would agree with you, which is why I want everyone to stay as well as for the Finance Committee discussion as well. So it's not a matter of anybody vacating the room.
So why don't we just keep it in the order that it is?
The motion's been made. We could spend another hour like we have at the Finance Committee meeting going back and forth.
Right.
And that's what I'm trying to avoid in this particular moment.
Right.
Councilwoman Leon has made a motion.
I just want to get the city business.
I recognize that. There's been a second. I take you're not going to be supporting it, Mr. Callahan.
I would prefer that they all hear everything.
Well, and that's why we all get to vote. Councilwoman Kranjski.
I'll just state, my concern is that while we can talk about the Finance Committee meeting at the end of the meeting, there's some pertinent items for new business that I believe people are here and would like to be here when we discuss it. And I don't think it's fair for them to have to wait till the end of the meeting for those issues to be brought up.
Understood.
Conversely, people are here for items on the agenda as well. And we've been in this situation before where members of the public who are here awaiting information about a vote that is on the agenda are forced to wait for hours and perhaps even leave before the vote takes place. We can make the same argument. Again, the motion is on the floor. We have an applicant here. So I'm presuming we're going to move forward with the vote.
I am going to ask Mr. Miller to call the roll on the vote to move new business to the very end of tonight's agenda.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
No.
Ms. Nancy Smith?
Nay.
Ms. Quintec?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
And Mr. Colon?
Aye. Passes 5-2. So the amended agenda now, the new business will be at the very end of the agenda tonight. Approval of the minutes for the April 15, 2025 meeting. Any comment on the minutes from April 15? Seeing none, we'll move on. Public comment. So this is public comment for anything that's not being voted on this evening. As is custom, I ask everyone to respect our 5-minute time limit. We do have 6 people who signed up in advance. So I will start with Elizabeth Pizarro, I believe. I apologize if I'm misreading your last name. And I'll ask everyone if you're comfortable to give your name for the record as our city clerk takes the minutes. Huh?
My name is Elizabeth Correll Pizarro. I'm the president of the Monocacy HOA. I have a home at 223 Wesley High Street. And there's 52 homes, and I'm speaking on the tenants' behalf. We have concerns on issues that we feel the city needs to get involved with. First, the homeless. The tents, the community is expanding from New Street Bridge between the canal and the Lehigh Street down to the wooden match and the railroad tracks. The dumpsters that you have there is very helpful, but it fills up within 2 to 3 days, and the trash is starting to pile up under 378 and onto Lehigh Street. We have mattresses, shopping carts, etc., being disposed on our community. We have safety concerns with the homeless roaming around the community. One entered my home, which I have a fenced area, and thank God my son was there, that he needed a bat in order to tell this person to leave. So this is very concerning. They also have campfires. They use propanes to cook or whatever. And this could be also concerned with because of wildfires. The tow pass, we can't even ride our bikes over there because they're constantly harassing or trying to steal bikes or whatever, which it has done. It's our concern also with our property value going down. Can the city do anything with some organization to help these homeless people? Is it a railroad issue? Is it the city issue? I don't know who owns this property, but something needs to be done because it's expanding and it's growing. On a different note, the community, can we permanently have receptacle for dog owners when they walk their dogs in the circle near the wooden match area? Because they dispose the waste anywhere, and we're the ones landing up picking it up. As well as Music Fest, we used to have trash containers going into our community, and they stopped for the last few years. If that can continue to go into at least the first few cul-de-sacs. On a different note, I was hoping that the city can help us out. We have one tenant, actually one homeowner, that the house is under foreclosure and using their backyard as a waste, putting all their trash. I have contacted the city health department, the city sanitation, and the police department, which one of the officers came to one of our HOA meeting, and basically nothing can be done. We have tried everything concerning this, and now we're having a rat and mice infestation. I think the city should help us out with this issue. And that's it.
Thank you.
And the different department heads are here tonight, and of course you can always reach out to any member of council. All of our emails are on the city website too.
I've been in contact with Tad Miller. But he, oh, okay, and he told me to come in, and I have a copy if we need this.
Okay, thank you. Our next person signed up, Anthony Spagnola. I believe that reads.
Hi, Anthony Spagnola, 578 Berry's Bridge, Bethlehem. I would like to talk about tonight about a business privilege tax that we pay every year. Myself, for my business, Soto Sani, 10 West 4th Street, Adagio, 530 Pembroke Road, as well as all the apartments, for myself, three of those separate ones, is in excess of like $4,000. Pay that every year. In the city of Bethlehem, we have at least 5,000 businesses that pay the business privilege tax. So if we can just do round numbers, we'll average that they pay $1,000 each business. That's over $5 million right in our city. My question is, on the south side of Bethlehem, and I've contacted engineering. I have a landlord at 10 West 4th Street, Fred P. Rooney. He's the landlord. There's an HOA, the Housing Association, which is all county, and the apartments which have taken over the south side are Americus. The sidewalks, there is a plan in place, and they said that there's bids out that they're going to work on the sidewalk from New Street down to Broadhead. They got $300,000. Now, in my mind's eye, you have a city masonry person. I can't understand why you want, let's call it, rally the troops or the city employees, workers, and give them an opportunity to allocate, give them those funds so they would be able to, you know, keep this all in-house instead of always, we're always bidding it out and unable to, you know, protect our own needs. So if you've ever walked, take a chance, please go over to 10 West 4th Street, walk over there, it's the bricks, and all over our city, which is great. With Main Street is the number one Main Street. This is like almost a comical bit where it's like the worst sidewalks in America. I can't understand that all of you, and I know you're only part-time, and I don't think anybody up there, what kind of job can you do part-time? And I don't mean in a negative way. I would start a fund or whatever we can do that you're able to put your full effort into it and know the people who are in the city. Like, I talked to him today. It's not my job. I'll talk to Chris Sewell, right, who's head of that department. Another department's the city forester. We have three trees on the corner there that are dead. They're going to fall. They're going to go down on a truck. It's going to be more of a liability. Now, how many times have you gone by there and you've seen these trees? Have you taken any notice to it? This city forester, you know, I think she needs to really look into these issues, or however it goes. I just wish we could get a plan. I know I love Laura Collins. She's economic development, her subsidiary Sarah, but we don't need like consultants. John Callahan did it 12 years ago. Is it going to change that much? That 4th and New is the busiest area in Bethlehem, and as well as the other businesses there. Tony Silvoy from The Goose, Jeff from Deja Vu, Mr. Benner, who owns a couple properties there as well, Mr. Finnegan. Does this fall on deaf ears? Do you all walk around the city? I've seen 3 of you come to my business, and when you needed votes, you came in. Then when you got your votes, you disappeared. It's very disheartening. I pay. I that's the greatest thing I do. And also, Anthony Spagnuolo makes himself money and his friends. So I want to help everybody. I want everybody to be the best version of themselves that they can be. Thirdly, Farrington Square up there, Lehigh, do they own that? On a Thursday, you have a food market. Do they all pay a 25-cent business privilege tax? I don't know if they do or if they don't. You know, it takes away my business for food that have the mortar and water, concrete that I'm working at, and they just bring in their trucks and are selling their foods. And the last thing, and I don't like the water, it's incredibly billed to me. I looked up, Lehigh University pays $477,000 in water. That's all they pay. If you got 6,000 students, another grad students, professors all over, how is it that minimal? For me, I own Adagio, and I pay a base rate of $200 a month, fire lane 1, fire lane 2. But that's for another issue. All right, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Pick. Our next speaker signed up tonight, Charlene Jenkins.
Hello, I'm Charlene Jenkins. I live at 512 Dakota Street, Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. And I'm speaking about the youth. And I'm reading more and more about how the parks are getting renovated. But the parks that are getting renovated, you're forgetting about the Southside parks. There is the Bethlehem Saints, who is the football field that has not been renovated or changed, or even have a scoreboard that works properly for the youth that are so-called not in the upper class to practice, or to even have equipment for them to play in a football field. I'm a taxpayer. I own my own house. I'm reading more and more about the Bethlehem Steelers fields getting renovated. I read about the Raiders getting some donations. But what about the South Side? We all talk about the South Side being a landmark. 378, you come down 378, you go past South Side. We're forgetting about the youth. You don't want to invest in the youth, and the youth are going to invest in the city, which is nothing but crime. You need to give these children something to do. The lower class, which is basically what people are saying is Southside, is not Southside. You got a lot of talent out there, but they have nowhere to go. I'm just asking you to look into the Bethlehem Saints football field, just to give a little bit of investment, a scoreboard, lines for the football field. Invest in equipment. You'd rather have the children play in an organized organization, or would you rather have them heading in the street and causing crime? I'm not going to take up a lot of your time. I just want to speak my mind because I'm reading more and more and more about the renovations of different parks. Saucon Park got a little renovation, but there's no pool. Everybody goes to Fountain Hill, or they go to over to the south or the north side. You want to keep the south side kind of renovated. You got Lehigh there. You got the casino there. What about the kids? What about the youth? These are going to be people who are going to take care of you when you get older. So if you don't put the investment into them now, they're not going to put the investment into you later. That's all I have to say.
Thank you. Next on our list is Joseph Lee.
Hello, everybody. My name, did I just start?
Yeah, if you mind giving your name for the record.
Joseph Lee.
Yeah, Joseph L. Lee.
I live on 5th Street, south side of Bethlehem. So most of you should know me if you're from Bethlehem. I'm the guy in 2016 that was stabbed and died on south side, and the city completely covered it up. The DA completely covered it up. It's never been printed in the newspapers. I get called a liar, but I got scars all over my body and I'm missing a kidney about it. I get called some of the most disgusting names by the Bethlehem police, treated like dog shit. Retaliation.
Lee, I'm going to ask you to watch the language.
Okay. Retaliation is a crime. Okay, I am quoted all kinds of laws and this and that because I'm too poor to get a lawyer. That's the only reason why Bethlehem is not sued worse than a John Herko lawsuit, which is why the privilege tax exists, by the way. City Hall need to create a tax because they got sued because the Bethlehem police murdered an unarmed guy. True story. Look it up. That's why you're paying a tax. So, anyways, the Bethlehem police, I have contacted the chief of police and the mayor, both of them. Mayor don't answer me back, he's a scumbag. The chief of police gives me all kinds of runaround. I was threatened recently online, directly, in actual direct threats with weapons. The cops came, told me because I was arguing back with the guy, that wasn't grounds to cite the guy. That's a grave violation of my First Amendment rights. My right to self-defense is also verbal in the state of Pennsylvania. It's incredible. But they told me because I didn't have online, stop bothering me, they couldn't do anything. So right in front of them, on my doorbell camera and on police body cam footage, I wrote, stop contacting me. The guy continued to threaten me from there 6 or 7 times. I kept calling the police. The Bethlehem police threatened to arrest me if I kept calling, because I kept calling every time he threatened me. Then they told him to block me, that I was the troublesome one. He was on my band's website. Okay? Making threats. That's the same as coming to my front door. My verbal self-defense is the same as defending yourself at home. This is ridiculous. Okay? So that needs to stop. And I am going to come in the next City Hall meeting with, they wanted me to give them evidence, which the police have evidence. I got body cam, I got the doorbell footage, whole thing's on camera. Okay? I got you guys. This is ridiculous. But I'm going to bring that footage, but I'm not going to submit it to him an email. I'm bringing it right here, City Hall, next meeting. And I'm going to circle everything and show you guys, and we're going to have this out because I'm going to report it to the Department of Justice, just like I did with stabbing and everything. You guys are lucky I didn't sue the city over that stabbing stuff. It was disgusting. I was standing up to a gang house on the south side, and they were calling me Cracker Honky, F-A-G-G, rocker boy, okay? And I was standing up to them, and they were telling me, bunch of left-wingers, that I was the racist one. It was insane. I got tons of footage on my camera. The Bethlehem police love making fun of me for pulling my camera out and videotaping them. It's crazy. But I've got footage of being as square as City Hall. And you know, the argument is, well, that was different administrations. No, what that shows is a habitual, chronic thing, an institutional thing in Bethlehem. And what's doing is it's hating on the poor, just like some of these other people said here today. All right? My man from Soda Sandy, he's right, man. The city don't take care of stuff, the park stuff, it's nuts. You guys just park, you just pocket, you pocket crap, you know? You pocket stuff, the poor, nothing. Southside, kids got nothing. I got a little bit of time, I want to bring up one more thing. Those BB guns that people are shooting, the little soft gels. Allentown has an ordinance against it because they are dangerous. They do hurt. They can create damage. Okay. I don't know what's going on with Bethlehem. I don't know if there's an ordinance, but we've got kids firing across 5th Street. These guns. The guns are powerful enough to shoot the projectiles across 5th Street. They're hiding behind cars, on cars, which just doing that on cars alone. I mean, maybe I'm out of touch and I'm old, but that's not, you shouldn't be doing that. You know, you shouldn't be going out and touching cars like that. They're like it's at the Matrix. Behind cars shooting, they're banging off the windows. They're banging everywhere. I don't know what's going on. I can report 2 houses specifically. If anybody would like to contact me, there are 2 houses that are harboring this behavior. It's crazy. Somebody's gonna get hurt. So I want to put it on record here right now so that when property does happen or somebody gets hurt, the city will be liable because they're aware of the problem. They can't weasel out and say, we don't know about it. You're going to get used to me coming to these meetings. I'm a citizen. My name is Joseph Lee. If you don't know me, you will know me. Get to know me. Thank you.
Take care.
Our next person signed up tonight, Lou Jimenez.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Lou Jimenez, 625 Pennsylvania Avenue, and president of Bethlehem Firefighters, Local 735. On behalf of Local 735, I want to take a moment to speak about some things that impact not only our members of Local 735, but every resident and visitor of our city. Fire department staffing. Local 735 issued a statement on social media about staffing cuts and the city's growth, both population-wise and in building development that has happened here over the years. I just wanted to be let known that this is not to degrade the administration, as we've come very far to build an amazing working relationship. Over the past year, we've been actively working side by side with fire administration to find real and meaningful ways to improve staffing across the department. This has been and continues to be a collaborative effort. Together, we're committed to solutions that enhance the safety of our firefighters and ensure we deliver the best possible service to our residents. With more multi-occupancy apartment buildings being built and our city growing, we must make safety a priority across all public safety departments. Through these ongoing discussions, one immediate priority has become clear. It's the need to properly staff our Northwest Fire Station, Engine 9, with one fire officer and two firefighters every hour of every day across all four platoons. Our staffing needs to be increased in other areas as well, and through collaboration between the city and local and being cognizant of budgetary items, we will keep the safety of our residents and firefighters the number one priority when we work towards this. Engine 9 protects a rapidly growing part of our city. Without that adequate staffing, both our members and the public face unnecessary risks. A fully staffed Engine 9 is essential to ensure safe, effective, and timely response when minutes matter most in a growing area. I also want to take a moment to acknowledge and appreciate the relationship we have with both fire administration and city leadership. We may not always agree on every issue, but we always make the true effort to work together in good faith. That partnership matters to Local 735. It's what will help us continue moving forward. As we continue these conversations, we remain committed to working collaboratively to strengthen our department, support our members, and provide the level of service that our community not only expects, but deserves. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next speaker, Harry Faber.
A historic juncture. What we do now, what we say here, what policies we reject or enact will be remembered. This is the moment. For 577 days, the world has watched a genocide unfold in Gaza. Yesterday, Israeli Security Cabinet unanimously approved the escalation of its campaign, including the conquest of Gaza and the forced displacement of its people. We must call it what it is, the annexation of Gaza and the ethnic cleansing of its people, all while we approach 10 weeks of Israel blocking food and water to the entire population. Meanwhile, here in the United States, fascism is here. On April 28th, President Trump issued an executive order unleashing militarized policing, shielding officers from accountability, and criminalizing dissent. As the Legal Defense Fund warned, this is not about public safety, it's about creating a police state to suppress opposition. Safety and security need to be reframed. Real safety and security is knowing that if you get injured, leave an abusive relationship, or quit an exploitative job, you won't go homeless or hungry. Safety and security does not come from knowing there are more militarized police in the community. It's knowing that your community won't allow your arrest or disappearing for speaking out against tyranny. Real safety isn't the funding of more police and punishment, it's the funding of structures that will keep us fed, sheltered, educated, connected, and working towards a better world. So the city of Bethlehem and Bethlehem PD now face a choice. Will you collaborate with this fascist escalation, or will you stand with the people you're sworn to protect and serve? We cannot capitulate to fascism. If we submit to fascism, we are digging our own graves. There is a war going on to conquer the collective human mind, and right now the American people are losing that fight. How do you get people to continue participating in a self-evidently broken system that obviously doesn't serve them? The answer is, you break the people. You turn them into addicts. You get them addicted to drugs and tell them it's medicine. Addicted to propaganda and tell them it's media and entertainment. You get them addicted to self-commodification. You indoctrinate them into an inherently self-loathing consumerist mindset and convince them that it's empowering, that they're hustlers, that they're breaking out of the matrix. You get them addicted to swipes and likes, to dopamine hits, to Netflix binges and Amazon next day delivery, to mile-long candy aisles at the grocery store. You get them so accustomed to instant gratification, to easy quick fixes, that the idea of pursuing long-term depth or purpose has never or never has time to occur to them. And that's the real key. You remove purpose. Nothing will turn a human being into a more predictably obedient consumer than a desperate need to fill a void and need for purpose that they were tricked into forgetting they even had in the first place. Luckily, since the war is for your mind, you have home court advantage. To start effectively fighting back, you need to pay attention. Pay attention to what you consume. Does it serve you? Does it help you grow? Does it keep you sharp? Does it mean you well? Or does it hurt you? Does it take advantage of you? Does it dull you and slow you down? Does it lull you into apathy and emptiness disguised as comfort and convenience? The same can be applied to ideology. One of the most insidious aspects of our present political economy is how it tells us what to think, how it shapes what's deemed important. This is done simply by publishing or not publishing. Don't worry about your neighbors losing their jobs and only source of income. Ignore the rising costs of rent and food. Don't think about how our finite resources are being spent cultivating destruction abroad. It's not important. The latest spectacle being pushed was the Met Gala yesterday. These people are important. Look at their outfits. Even former VP Kamala Harris attended. The theme was tailoring black style, all while our federal government is preparing more illegal intervention on the African continent. I'm referring specifically to that of Ibrahim Traore, the captain of Burkina Faso, who General Michael Langley, during a U.S. Senate Armed Service Committee hearing on April 3rd, accused of being a threat to his people. The spectacles are important, while U.S. foreign policy is treated as if it does not affect you. We must remember the entire purpose of the social construct of government is to benefit the lives of the people, not for those in government to enrich themselves off the destruction of the planet. This moment demands more than symbolic solidarity. It demands action. So I urge council and this administration to divest from militarized policing and reject federal grants aimed at weaponizing our officers against our communities. I urge, secondly, to protect dissent. I urge the council pass resolutions affirming the right to protest. You might not have liked what this gentleman came here and said and how he acted, but he has the right to do that, and we need to protect that. And third, we have to stand with Palestine against this genocide, publicly take a stance, we're named after Palestine, and local complicity by boycotting Israel. We cannot undo 577 days of inaction, but we can refuse to add another day to that tally. The future is built on what we do now. Will the city of Bethlehem be remembered as collaborators or as the ones who fought back?
Thank you, Mr. Faven. That exhausts our list of who had signed up before the meeting. So I'll go around the room. Was there anyone to the left who wants to make comment who has not had a chance to yet? Turn to the wide center. Was there anyone who wants to make comment who hasn't had a chance to yet? Gentlemen in the front. Mr. Caratola.
Hi. I'm Artie Caratola, 813 Lawford Street, Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. I like to state that going back to December of last year, a member of City Council pushed our papers to put me on the front pages making anti-Semitic comments. What has happened is there ain't a chance in the heat of the infinity that I would ever get elected being considered anti-Semitic. My friends who were Jewish backed away from me. And I had a lot of friends that were Jewish that were working with me. I made a few jokes, and I also made a few jokes at Arts Quest, and I for a full house, nobody walked out. But City Council never backed me in getting Arts Quest to have me eliminated as being a racist. So here I am, an anti-Semitic racist, running for mayor of the city. That's a joke. But however, the Republican Party was going to back me. But I'm a Democrat. I said, you're not going to win if I change, they want me to change, they wanted me to change to be a Republican. I said, you're not going to have a chance in the heat of eternity to go ahead and have a Republican mayor in a Democratic city. Keep me as a Democrat, push me with the Republican Party. They didn't want to do that. So anyway, elected officials, it's a great job. You got a chance of two or three people going up against your job to get the big money from the taxpayers. Isn't that great? You could apply for a job as being a manager of McDonald's, and 20 to 50 people are going for the position. But it's easier to be an elected official and take money from the taxpayers. If I was elected, I wouldn't take any money. I'm not married. I got no kids that I know of. I don't have to send my kids to Harvard to become attorneys to make people's lives miserable. And I don't need the money. I'm well off the way I am, being 100% disabled American veteran. I would have made a stand to serve my country again and done it for nothing. You don't need to have someone who's been to Harvard to go ahead and be the mayor of the city. But I'm glad we're going to have a woman mayor, because I did state at the United Nations gathering in New York City that if women were running the world, we'd have peace and world unity. Because as men, all we want to do is fight. Women, they negotiate. Unless that's our time of the month, but that's another story. But mainly they want to negotiate.
Sure, hold on, please watch the crass comment.
Oh, I was being diplomatic about it, or was I being democratic about it? Well, anyway, but okay, the fact remains that women would make, I said, at the United Nations gathering, it should be the law to belong to the United Nations, you must have a woman leader. And I hope we have a female mayor for our city. But, like I was saying before, if you are an elected official and you're working for nothing, you get a lot of perks. Because no matter what you do afterwards, you are going to get money. But then you get the perks of all the compensation for your family and everything, for all the benefits on top of it. But now look at Donald Trump. Now, a lot of you people don't like him, but the fact remains, once, if he quit the presidency tomorrow, he could be in a major motion picture, and no other person could get the job. Arnold Schwarzenegger, Kevin Costner, nobody. He would get the job as the main part. People would come and see the movie. He would be a million-dollar seller. And I got the book, the screenplay for Running for the Presidency of the World. The part is there, a major part. Google it on Amazon, Malibu, written by Artie Curatola. A great thing for Trump. But what I'm saying is, elected officials, you don't need to be even getting any money. And I would have been an example, but I'm not going to be your mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Garrett.
Grace will be. Thank you very much. God bless.
Is there anyone else in the Wide Center who would make comment this evening? Mr. Allen.
Stephen Antonelix, 737 Ridge. The best government can only be achieved when an educated electorate selects the best people who are seeking public office. This is what I am attempting to do here. A single party government is not the best government. Seeking four seats, we have six Democrats and one Republican candidate. I suggest that Republican candidate Joseph Poplawski be elected, because the best governments are usually bicameral, thereby providing a check and balance on council. On the Democratic side, we have two incumbents and four unknowns. Usually, incumbents are reelected, but in this case, I suggest caution. The incumbents are H. Kwiatkowski and R. Leone. How well do they serve during the last 3 years? A simple method to determine this was by handing to all private citizens attending council meetings a form called Citizens Evaluation of Elected Bethlehem Council Members. Ms. Leone was given a grade of B or 3.2 by the citizens, while H. Kwiatkowski was given a grade of F or 0.9. The highest and lowest scores of the seven council members. Would it be in the best interest of the city to re-elect a person with a grade of F? How do we evaluate candidates of unknown history for public service? One safe method would be to select Bethlehem-born candidates with the longest history of Bethlehem residency. They will possess the esprit de corps necessary for good service. Of the four unknowns, I have heard J. Daniels speak well and intelligently and feel she would be a good choice because of her outside concerns. I have no personal knowledge of T. Cantone, J. Amon, if that's pronounced correctly, or C.D.E. I certainly would choose without hesitation an unknown candidate for a seat over an incumbent that my fellow citizens have observed as doing an adequate job.
Is there anyone else in the wide center who wants to make comment? Is there anyone else to the right who wants to make comment this evening?
No.
Is there? So that exhausts our first public comment. Is there anyone here who wants to make any comment on anything that's being voted on the agenda tonight? We didn't have anyone sign up in advance. Favor, I believe I see your hand. And while you're coming up to the lectern, I will remind everybody, as was mentioned by a previous speaker, everyone does have the right to address council and speak on what you want. Historically, we have tried to leave the politics of city business outside in the world of campaigning and speak on agenda items and what is going on as it relates to that. But again, we have our rights. I'm not going to repeat that, Mr. Antalis. What's your favorite floor?
We are voting on the zoning changes,
for
correct?
Avenue?
And court, or, what was the name? Moncourt?
Yes.
Yeah. I just wanted to urge you guys to vote no. I remember his presentation. It was terrible. And he was arguing about putting in a drive-through. We've already talked about how we want that area specifically to be a walkable community. Adding a drive-through, I mean, he was so lazy. He said he wanted to put in a McDonald's. The community doesn't need another McDonald's. We don't need it there. We don't need it here. We don't need another McDonald's. McDonald's also is active in their support for this ongoing genocide. So we don't need more fast food in this community. We don't need a drive-through in that area.
They are. They are.
But get a life.
We are not everybody's stop.
Okay.
Mr. Faber,
talking about
sir,
talking
Mr. Faber, about please keep addressing council. Sir, I'm not going to repeat it again. And Mr. Faber, continue with your comments. Sir, I've disengaged. Thank you.
I'm just urging, I don't think you should change the zoning for that one dude who gave a very lackluster presentation. You guys saw it. You know it was bad. You know it was very lazy. Don't give in. Vote no.
Was there anyone else
talking about
sir,
you?
We are not
about you, you fucking weed.
Sir, I'm going to ask you to remove yourself from this meeting, please.
This is my ass, weenie. You go put on 30 pounds. Kiss my ass. Fuck you.
I saw the other legs were still
there. Was there? I am going to continue on with the meeting. Was there anyone else in the room, to the left, the center, the right, who wanted to make comment on anything that we're voting on this evening? We're going to continue on with the agenda. Just give us 1 second. There's an issue with the YouTube that brought our attention.
The Wi-Fi is unstable. The connection is unstable.
I'm going to continue the meeting. We have to continue on with the meeting. If you're able to problem shoot it, thank you, Mr. Miller, Councilwoman Laird. Old business, any old business from members of council? I don't see any old business. We already moved new business to the end of the meeting. So communication 6A.
On April 17th, 2025, memorandum and attached resolution and exhibits from Assistant Solicitor Matthew Deschler to amend the civil service rules relating to the fire department. Attorney Deschler explains Pennsylvania certification requirements for fire inspectors have changed. Civil Service Commission voted 3-0 on April 15th to recommend amending the civil service rules.
And resolution 10A is on the agenda tonight. Communication 6B.
On April 15th, 2025, memorandum and proposed resolution from Director of Water and Sewer Resources, Edward Vascola. The memorandum seeks authorization to execute an agreement with J. Owen Bradley Construction Company of Bethlehem to provide materials and labor to install a total of 4 valves for 2 projects. The cost is $337,491. The work is to be completed within 180 days of the notice to proceed. There are no renewals. 3 bids were received and the recommended contract was found to be the lowest responsible bidder.
Resolution 10B is on the agenda tonight. Communication 6C.
On April 30th, 2025, memorandum from Solicitor John F. Spurk Jr. with an attached use permit agreement resolution. The permittee is Arts Quest and the event is the 2025 Taco Fest. The event will take place from noon to 6 p.m. on June 1st. The permit duration will be from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. on that same date. Premises will include 1st Street from Polk Street to the Eastern Terminus and Founders Way between 1st and 2nd Streets.
And resolution 10C is on the agenda. Communication 6D.
On April 30th, 2025, memorandums from City Solicitor John Spurk Jr. with an attached use permit agreement and resolution. Permittee is the Mount Airy Neighborhood Association. Subpermittee is HBC LLC, doing business as Hijinks Brewing Company. The events are the 2025 Bethlehem Rose Garden Farmers Market and the Rose Fest pop-up event. The Farmers Market will be held each Saturday between June 7th and October 11th from 9 a.m. until 1 p.m. The Rose Fest pop-up event will be June 21st only from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. The duration will be the same dates from 8 a.m. until 2:30 p.m. for the Farmers Market and 10 a.m. until 2 p.m. for Rose Fest. The premises will include the Bethlehem Rose Garden Park.
And resolution 10D is on the agenda tonight. 6E.
On April 30th, 2025, memorandum from City Solicitor John S. Burke Jr. with an attached resolution communication ground lease agreement. Greenlight Networks PA LLC wishes to use 220 square feet at 247 East North Street, also known as 248 East Garrison Street, for the installation and operation of communication equipment for internet service and other computing, communications, information, or data transmission services.
Resolution 10E is on the agenda. 6F.
April 30th, 2025, memorandum and proposed resolution with exhibits from Public Works Director Michael Alcall. Memorandum seeks approval to accept from the Bethlehem Aquatic Club the donation of a pavilion to be erected at the Memorial Pool Facility at 259 Billixville Road.
And 10F is on the agenda tonight. 6G.
April 30th, 2025, memorandum and proposed resolution from Edward Vascola, Director of Water and Sewer Resources. The memorandum seeks authorization to execute agreement with Verdantis LLC of Bethlehem to advance plans for modifications to the wastewater treatment plant's final clarifier recirculation system and the final design, including specifications suitable for bidding and construction services. Cost is $82,920, and the work to be completed by January 31st, 2026. Four proposals were received to the city's RFP, and Verdantis LLC's proposal was deemed to be the best fit.
And the resolution 10G is on the agenda. 6H.
An April 11th, 2025 memorandum from Assistant Director of Planning and Zoning, Craig Pfeiffer, advising that the city's planning commission at its April 10th meeting voted 4-0 to recommend favorable adoption by the city council of an updated subdivision and land development ordinance. Mr. Pfeiffer requests the consideration of adoption be placed on a future city council agenda.
I will accept a motion and a second to schedule a public hearing for July 15 to consider the amendments to the subdivision and land development ordinance.
So moved. Second.
So I'll say a motion by Councilwoman Kwiatek, second by Councilwoman Leon. Any discussion on the schedule of a public hearing for July 15? We'll call roll.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Kramson-Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Slayer?
Aye.
And Mr. Cologne?
Aye. Passes 7-0. The public hearing is now scheduled for July. Is it July 15 or July 18?
July 15.
There's a typo in something I'm reading. The public hearing is scheduled for July 15, 2025. And the ordinance to amend the saldo will be placed for first reading on the August 5th agenda. Moving on to reports. I don't have anything to report this evening other than I just want to share my thanks to Chief Cott and all the other members of the police department that are present tonight for unexpected assistance with that disruption that we had. I'll say in my 10th year on City Council now, that's the first time we've ever had anything to that degree from an individual. And again, I thank you for your help. Mr. Mayor?
Thank you. I think I would start, we can do the administrative order first. I hereby appoint Lucas Wolk of 504 Prospect Avenue, Bethlehem, PA 1818, a membership on the Zoning Hearing Board. This appointment is effective through May 23rd.
Administrative order for Lucas Wolk to the Zoning Hearing Board. Resolution sponsored by Ms. Grimson Smith and Mr. Cologne.
Discussion on the appointment.
I just had a question. I'm just wondering, because this is a very important board and we're looking at possible, rezoning the city. Because I don't see anything on the resume as far as like anything relevant to zoning. What kind of training do new people get when they get on zoning?
Ms. Collins, can answer that.
So for all new appointees to the Zoning Hearing Board, similar to other boards, they start with training and guidance from our in-house staff, so from the Planning Bureau, so they'll work directly with the zoning officer to get the basic background materials for the role, the zoning ordinance, in the case of the Planning Commission as a different example, the subdivision and land development ordinance. And then we also encourage all new members to go through trainings with the Lehigh Valley Planning Commission. So you are probably familiar with those. I think you often get emails about them as well, but quarterly LVPC does trainings on zoning as one topic, land development, municipal planning, and so our zoning hearing board members go through those as well. In the case of this particular applicant, they reached out and expressed interest. We had an initial discussion about not only their experience, but also their interest, and they have attended zoning hearing board meetings and had further discussions about the work of the board, and we're confident that they are intellectually capable, sufficiently interested, and professional to take on the role.
Thank you. I did reach out and spoke to Mr. Wolk, and he seemed very amiable person, and definitely has professional experience in other areas, and admitted that he doesn't have any experience, but he would like to get more involved. So I just want to make sure, we have people that, if they don't have experience, that they definitely have experience, because it is, I know it's people who have been on before said, it's a lot.
It is, and it's very rare that anybody who has direct zoning experience is, living in the city of Bethlehem and available and interested in doing the work. It's a pretty specific area, so I think you'll see with just about everybody who's been appointed that the specific experience in zoning is often learned on the job.
And my only other question is, who will they be replacing? Is it someone whose term has expired that wants to get off? Or?
No, we've actually been, so we have five positions total, and we've had a vacancy for a while now, since, I guess, some of our last people who stepped down previously. So there's nobody whose appointment is not being renewed.
Okay, thank you.
Any other discussion?
That was my question. I just didn't know who this individual was replacing. So who was the person that stepped down? I'm just curious.
I wish I had my list with me. I mean, we've had some turnover. I think Mr. Fitzpatrick, who was the chair for a while, stepped down, I want to say maybe a year ago.
Ms. Lee stepped down at some point, right?
Yes, Ms. Lee stepped down in the past year or two as well. And then we also have two alternate positions open.
Thank you.
Any other discussion on the appointment?
Wanted to put in a word for that zoning training that the Planning Commission does. I did it in my first year on council, and it has been invaluable. I found that it was really, really helpful, and I refer back to the papers and materials from the training quite often, so thank you.
Anything else? We'll call the roll.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Ramsey Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Quiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Lair?
Aye.
And Mr. Ballone?
Aye. Passes 7-0.
I will then, I'm sorry, was there a question on the administrative order?
We'll back up.
Just so everybody knows, YouTube's back to recording.
I would then allow, obviously, I'm going to call Chief Reich up. Obviously, we had a 4-alarm fire on Friday. We've been working on that extensively over the last 4 or 5 days, especially our first responders. So Chief Reich is going to give a kind of summary, a report. I think all together, we ended up through mutual aid having 87 different firefighters come to the site. Chief Reich's going to just kind of run through all the different information. I think he was going to reach out as well with a summary to council as far as what kind of went through and even how things are going forward. But many of us were there for several hours, but not compared to the first responders who were there. I think Chief Reich was there just about all weekend, and I know Mr. Jimenez and several of our firefighters are here. And I just want to publicly thank all of our first responders, our police, our fire, our paramedics, our health bureau, who was there helping to check people in. A lot of times, if you've never been through this, and I asked Chief Reich, and you looked it up with our deputy, Mr. Baer, yes, this is the 8th, 4th alarm fire in the past 25 years. So we have one about every 3 years on average. But it was a situation with our health bureau, who was there checking people in. And not just as far as like pets, but also sometimes you don't realize somebody left in the morning to go to work. And they take their medication in the morning, but then they got to take it again at 6 or 6:30, and they're worried about getting back in or not. And all of those kind of details and all of those kind of actions were being coordinated, and Chief Reich was actually obviously helping to lead the way. But as for our police departments, our paramedics, our firefighters, I think at 1.2 we had 41 firefighters there, of city firefighters, I think was the number we talked about, but overall 87 through mutual aid that we had. And you know, one of the things I've learned is when you have a 4-alarm fire in the Lehigh Valley, they're always mutual aid calls because nobody's got 87 people to be able to do that. But Chief Reich's going to kind of run through some more of the details.
Certainly. Thank you. And first and foremost, I've been contacted by a lot of members of the public and by council. And really the thanks that we've received goes to our firefighters, the folks that were on the roof of that building fighting that fire, going up 5-6 flights of stairs to get to the penthouse to battle that fire. That type of fire is always challenging and very equipment and personnel dependent. And that's why it grew to a 4th alarm. What also didn't help is the wind was very strong gusts at the time and blowing the length of the building, which helped push that fire across the roof of the building. Like I said, the real thanks goes to the firefighters that were on duty that day, and I have to acknowledge the assistant chief working that day was Tony Prelitz. He led the 18 firefighters that were on duty that day amazingly. He immediately started coordinating efforts. It was a textbook operation for fireground operations. We had 18 firefighters on duty. They all ended up at the scene. We had two lieutenant inspectors that were working that day. They were at the scene. Myself, Deputy Chief Bear, were at the scene. We ended up calling out 19 firefighters, city firefighters, from home. And as the mayor said, we ended up with 41 firefighters there. We couldn't do it by ourselves. We had excellent support from the police department. They were going through the building, helping evacuate people out of the building. Two of their officers carried one of our wheelchair-dependent residents down 5 flights of stairs to safety. She couldn't express her gratitude enough to me when we were at the evacuation point, and that is commendable. Also is all of our paramedics on scene that provided care to the first responders. It was a hot day. It really takes it out of you. Just breathing a cylinder of air, it's very dry, the air in the cylinder, so that you don't have organisms growing in the moist air if it was in the cylinder. So it's very dry. It sucks water out of you just by breathing it. And I've read it takes as much as 16 ounces out of your body every cylinder. Not including wearing all that gear in the sun, battling a fire, and all the perspiration. So it's very exhausting. And our firefighters, when they come out, they need rehab. They need water and items like bananas that often show up at a rehab scene. And our paramedics were there providing that, providing health assessments, checking people's blood pressure and so forth, and making sure that our personnel were kept safe. Not only to our personnel, but to all the mutual aid departments that also responded. We had 7 paramedics, 15 police officers. We had 6 personnel from the Economic and Community Development Office. Mike Simonson was there. He brought over housing inspectors. They were there to help. It was a large number of people, being a large apartment building. Brought them over to help coordinate gathering people in specific areas so that we could do a headcount. The Health Bureau was there with 5 personnel. They did an amazing job at what they do best, and that is helping people. They organized that operation very quickly, gathered all the names, apartment numbers, telephone numbers, whether they had meds that they needed and how soon they needed that, whether they had a pet. All those important details that we need later on in the call as we make decisions. We also had 8 firefighters and officers from the Allentown Fire Department. We work very closely with the Allentown Fire Department. They showed up on scene with their ladder truck, immediately asked what we needed them to do, went straight to the roof and started working. That's the relationship that we've built over the last year with them, by meeting with them and planning for this interaction going forward. We also had Bethlehem Township sent 7 firefighters and officers. Easton, 6 firefighters and officers. Hanover Township, Northampton County, 3 firefighters and officers. Lanta Bus, which we used to assist folks that didn't have transportation to get to the hotels, they provided a bus driver and a supervisor to take those folks there. Lower Saucon Fire Department sent 4 firefighters and officers. Nancy Run sent 6 firefighters and officers. And the important thing with Nancy Run is they also bring air truck, something that we don't have. It's a county resource that they respond throughout the county, providing service where they fill our cylinders so that we can continue to do our job. Without those air cylinders and without that refilling of the cylinders by that department, we wouldn't be able to do our job. Palmer Municipal Fire Department sent 10 firefighters and officers, and finally the Red Cross sent 3 personnel to do what they do best, and that is help coordinate folks after a fire and arrange for what aid is needed. So with that long list, that's the reason why the situation was successful. It starts with our firefighters and the hard work and efforts that they did, and goes all the way down till we find housing and transportation to that temporary housing and meet those needs. Is there any questions from...
We're still on the mayor's report, there's no real discussion or debate at the moment.
I wanted to allow two. Mr. Simonson is here, and I was hoping that Mr. Simonson might be able to just kind of like talk about what is next as much as possible. As far as there was a lot of coordination as far as the residents being coming displaced, a lot of questions of what the future of the building is. Mr. Simonson and Ms. Collins have been spending, the last 5 days trying to work out and help with a lot of those details about what's moving forward. But I would obviously end that first part of the conversation. And then if people want to have questions about it, they absolutely can. But I think it was just kind of good to go through all of it, is I do want to just reiterate what the chief had said about the amazing job of our firefighters, of the whole second platoon that showed up, but also how just efficient things were, like the health bureau coming to be able to help people. It really was one of those moments where you never want to see, but when you're there and you're watching how impressive the professionalism is from our firefighters to our police to our paramedics to our health bureau to Mike, and thinking about what's got to happen with the building to let people in, it truly was, I would use the word impressive as far as the readiness, as far as the personnel was concerned. But Mr. Simonson, if you could just kind of talk a little bit,
sure,
about kind of where we go from here.
Yep, thank you. I too would like to thank the fire department for their valiant effort. It was really a cost-saving effort, a life-saving effort, and on all fronts. But now what happens with the building is the early damage assessment was done by myself and by companies hired by the insurance companies for the developers or the property owners. So what we'll do now is we'll go through that building floor by floor, room by room, see what we can do to turn power back on, remove walls, remove ceilings, whatever we need to do to access it and open it up and get it as dry as possible. I've already been through with several of the rehabilitation restoration companies, some of the electricians, some of the mechanical servicing companies, just to see where we stand. It may be some time. I don't want to say it's going to be open in a couple of weeks. We don't know that. We don't know the extent yet because the damage hasn't been completely assessed. We've had some heavy rains over the last couple of days, which kind of hampered the ability to dry it out as fast as we would have liked. But we anticipate power back in the building within the next few days, maybe a week or so. And then with that being said, the drying out process to begin. We've started putting temporary roof on the building so that to keep the water and keep it airtight. So I would assume that once we start this process and once we can get some power back in and some units stabilized, the possibility to opening things up to more people to get back in to get their things, to do those kind of things, and kind of it starts the process of the rehabilitation. It will be some time, but we can start slowly allowing people back in.
And the process there for Mr. Simonson as well is, as the building inspector, it's about safety. So it's not, as much as people want to get back in there, until everything is up to code, which is the way that his office handles everything, from a safety point of view, people are just not going to be able to get back in there. And obviously that's ongoing conversations as far as Mr. Simonson is concerned, Mr. Baer, who is involved in some of these conversations as well. But it's always about safety. That's what this is about. People are not going to be let back in there until it's safe to go back in there. And there's a standard that needs to be met that I think the plan, as far as what we heard over the past 3, 4, 5 days, is moving in that direction. But the question that we are getting, obviously, from a lot of people is, like, when are people going to be able to open? When are the commercial entities going to be able to open? They had to throw out all their food, I believe. Just a lot of lost costs there and things like that. So it's ongoing in a lot of different directions as far as these different kind of trains trying to run on time. But I just want to publicly thank Mr. Simonson and Ms. Collins, who have been spending a lot of time trying to work out all of these different kind of factors to try to, do this process in as a safe and efficient way as possible to move forward, to be able to let those, whether or not it's the commercial tenants or some of the tenants or whatever it might be, move forward, because there's a lot of different factors. So, Mr. Clone, I would defer to you. If people have questions for Chief Reich or Mr. Simonson about fire, I think it would be pertinent on my end, but that's your decision as far as if it's...
I don't like strike order, but given the circumstances, yes, because of obviously disparity of firearms, people have questions. So I will open it up to discussion just as it relates to questions about...
Sorry, you want something else to say, Chief?
I apologize. I forgot to flip my page. There are two very important people that we need to also recognize for their efforts. We had the Lehigh Valley CART team there. That's an animal care group that came in with their trailer and provided kennel services for residents that had pets that we were able to remove from the building. All the pets were accounted for. All pets made it out safe. We're so happy to report not only were there no injuries to any residents or firefighters, there was no injuries to any of the pets as well. And that team came out and housed the pets as we were able to remove them from the building. And finally, last but not least, is most importantly was Northampton Community College. Their security staff, their public safety, assisted us. I contacted them to say, hey, this is Chief Wright, the City of Bethlehem, and this goes to the partnership that the city has developed over the year and the community that we have here. Contacted them, this is Chief Wright. I would like to bring about 70 to 100 people in your lobby. Is that possible? We have a big fire across the street. Their chief showed up within 5 minutes with one of his staff. They immediately began opening every door on their ground floor. They provided us with space for all the residents, restrooms for the residents to use, and also a large meeting room that we could set up a temporary EOC, Emergency Operations Center, where myself and several key members, as the situation developed, such as Red Cross and the management group and so forth, we could meet and coordinate efforts together in one space. And without their giving us that space to do that work and to allow the residents someplace to just sit down and rest, and it was air conditioned for them, and that was invaluable. And to have it be so close that we don't need to find transportation, sometimes when these incidents happen, we don't have that luxury where something is that close. We have to find transportation to get all of the residents to maybe a high school or some other facility. But the fact that without any warning, I showed up and asked with this need, and they immediately opened up their building and their arms and welcomed us.
Thank you, Chief Wright. I will, like I said, relative to questions for Chief Wright or Mr. Simonson as related to the fire, anything from members of council? Councilman Cranston.
Well, I just want to say thank you so much. I think there's no words to express the gratitude to you, and it sounds like to all the hundreds of individuals and entities that made this what could have been a real tragedy, you know, not a tragedy aside from, you know, the loss of the building, but thank God there were no injuries. So that's I really want to express my gratitude, and I think everybody's gratitude for that. And I just want to, you know, I don't want to put you on the spot here, but I know, you know, we've had some issues with staffing, and now we have more, you know, more firefighters on death, like in the academy and waiting, and given this unfortunate situation, and we saw, you know, what we needed. Where are you at since this fire, as far as like feeling that we're okay with staffing, or feeling that we might need to look at that again? I mean, I don't want to put you on the spot because I know you've been through a lot in the last week, but I'm just thinking, you know, this is an opportune time since we've had this horrible tragedy experience.
Certainly. So overall, I just want to give an overall view of what we've accomplished. I've been in this position a year now. And overall, we started with a lot of grievances that we needed to work through, a lot of issues that we needed to work through. And it's through working with President Jimenez and his staff, and we built a relationship. We started having monthly meetings again where we can discuss issues and make progress. I go to the stations and meet with our firefighters. We sit and have lunch together. That's where a lot of things are solved, you know. So it's that type of relationship and effort that we've developed where we were able to resolve as many issues and make as much progress as we have in the last year. So one of those issues overall was staffing, and that's why we approached the mayor and council to approve that second academy, which is something that we haven't done. From looking back at our records, we hadn't done a second academy in 30 years. So that was a big ask in the middle of the year, but it was truly needed because we were consistently down a large number of firefighters. So we needed to replace those. So working with the local 735, we identified that as our immediate concern at that time related to staffing, is to get that approval and to fill vacancies as quickly as we can. Now, we've planned for a second academy this year also. So we sent a total of 16 people last year through academies. We sent 8 people so far this year to academy, and we're sending another 6 in the second academy this year. So that's a total of 30 personnel that we've invested in and provided training for to fill these vacancies as quickly as possible. That's a large commitment from you, from the administration, as it was over $500,000. I believe it was around $525,000 was spent to train those 30 folks that we're looking to have by the end of this year. And that doesn't include their salaries. That's just in the training needed for like the academy and rental of their gear and all of those associated items. So our focus was to fill the ranks, and as we fill the ranks is to see how that relates to the number of people each day that we have, like showing up to fill seats in trucks, and then that will give us a better perspective of the direction that we need to go. Another part of that that I approached the administration was, once we work towards accomplishing that, is that we could possibly consider doing a study of the fire department and the city. The last time we've done such a study of the fire department and what is needed and where we can project to grow in the coming years was back before I was hired. And so I think the city has changed a lot since then. The fire department has changed a lot since then. So conducting that study at some point here in the future, which we've gathered information from 4 different vendors that provide such a service, and as we move forward, we can consider having a study like that done. I would like to say that Lou and I working together could come up with a solution, but that's from our perspective. I think a third party look at the city and our resources gives us a better idea of maybe where we should go. Another aspect of that is that Local 735 asked us to gather information to provide to the IFF to conduct a study. And I forget the exact name of the study. A GIS study where they provide feedback on staffing levels and so forth. So Deputy Chief Bear spent quite a bit of time going through our fire software and gathering all the data that President Jimenez has requested. We have provided that to them. They submitted it to the IFF, and I don't have a real good read the time of when we can expect that feedback from the IFF. Kind of keeps fluctuating, but we'll be receiving that at some point in the future. So that'll be another data point that we can use. And then most recently, as President Jimenez had mentioned about Engine 9, it's just one of the other issues that were kind of on the table waiting to be addressed, and we're to that point. And we met in April in the monthly meeting that I mentioned that we reinstated and have conducted every month. We discussed that and what that might look like and different ways that we could potentially address that issue, and agreed that we would, both sides would review that, come up with more information, and review that at our May meeting, which is May 28th. So that's kind of the overall I know it was a long-winded, but I think that it's important to show the overall picture of what we've accomplished together.
And just to add to that, Chief Frank, is, you know, basically when Chief Frank took over, we were about to have, over a two-year period, a whole bunch of retirements. And essentially, we've had almost 30 retirements. So the idea, because I think currently right now, as far as showing up to work, we're down to what, 14?
14.
So even if we're paying the people that are in the academy, and we're about to send more people to the academy, but the plan in 24 and 25 was, because there are some staffing questions that can't be answered until we have all of these positions filled. So, because right now, understanding about whether or not we have 24 people, you know, per shift, like, we don't actually have that number, even though that's what the budgeted number is, and that's what the planned number is, as far as per the platoon. So then the idea in 24 and 25 was to go to two academies, and then after we send the six people, I believe, next month, if there's no more retirements, and we can't send somebody until we have a retirement, but if there were no more retirements from June until December, when those six show up to work, we will then be at the full complement of, I'm making this up as far as like non-officers, non-desk people, 90 firefighters and 90 positions. I believe there's one person that's currently in arbitration.
Correct.
So it could be 89 or 90, so you can't hire somebody. But the plan afterward that's been talked about for a year is that there will be conversations between the chief and IAFF in 2025 about what that staffing needs study would look like in 2026, at which point we would include money in the 2026 budget to be able to like look at how we could necessarily carry that out, because the city is different, obviously, in 2025 than it was 25 years ago when that study was done. So we have kind of looked at it over the past year. We got to fill the positions that are open. So we moved mountains to find $250,000 last year and this year to be able to send more firefighters to the academy. And now once we have those positions full and we have moved through the majority of the big retirement phase, then we'll be able to take a look at like what are our needs and so on and so forth. And connected to Mr. Jimenez's legitimate point about the lieutenant, just to, once again, because I've talked to the chief a lot about this to understand it, is we have four fire stations and we have five positions on at any one time that are officers, correct?
So, yep, correct. There's four stations,
yeah.
Four platoons. Each platoon has five officers.
So, in a perfect world where no one's on vacation, no one's out sick, no one has out with an injury, you have all five people showing up for all four platoons, and this problem doesn't exist. But in the real world, people are on vacation. People, we have a couple people that are out right now on long-term sick, I believe. So then it's a question of, like, how do you create new officer positions? And that's just not as simple as, like, we hire one more person. So part of the conversation, and the chief and Mr. Jimenez, and I really appreciate it, and I think they both said the same thing. It's like, I've been doing this a while. Like, I've never seen better collaboration between the union president and the administration and the fire chief than we have right now. And over the last year, they've really worked together on a lot of different issues. Some we'll talk about here, some we won't, as far as trying to make sure we work through these grievances and things like that. But they've been meeting about this particular situation for several months, more meetings that have already been scheduled, independent of anything that happened last week, to be able to talk through what are the different issues to be able to get this. Because it involves potentially creating new officer positions, or dealing with things with civil service, or new officer lists. So it's not a simple thing. And to both of their credit, they understand that. And they're having those conversations that are ongoing now, as far as like how do we necessarily fix the structural issue. That obviously if you have five people at four platoons and four stations and 20 officers, all it takes is like one person to be on vacation or one person to be on sick, and then you only have four officers and you either have to pay overtime or not fill the position as far as like work with 18 or 19 or 20 or whatever that might be. So there's a lot of different factors that they're working through related to this as far as a structural issue.
I just want to say thank you for all that information. It's very valuable. And thank you so much for being so collaborative and supportive of all the firefighters. And you're really doing a great job, and we're really in good hands. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Any other questions or comments for Chief Wright or Mr. Johnson?
I know that we are not able to determine how long it will be before people are back in their homes, but I did see that the management company had been providing hotel rooms for individuals. Is that indefinite? What is the living situation for folks who were displaced?
I'm not 100% clear on that. I know from my last conversations with the property owners, it was some of the tenants were being taken care of by their home, by their renter's insurance. Some were being taken care of by the Red Cross. I didn't have a clear count on that for myself. I think it's still too early to tell because insurance companies are still going through the building and looking at contents and stuff. I would assume we probably have an answer to that question as to where it's going to go probably by the end of the week.
Okay.
I don't have an answer to the, but I might have a better, clearer path for that.
Understood. I can check in. I did appreciate knowing that the management company was attending to that, as they
yes.
well should. And also wanted to add my thanks. I mean, you know, Chief Reich, you provided this memo. I wasn't aware you were going to be speaking tonight and kind of sharing all of the details if you hadn't. I was prepared to, because I have to be honest, in looking at this sort of blow-by-blow account of what happened, all of the individuals who were involved, some of whom surprised me, it is impressive, it is inspiring, and it was quite moving to read. I'm just sitting at home preparing for this meeting and reading this. It really was deeply inspiring. The coordination, the collaboration. I should be looking at many people in this room. And just really, really inspired a deep, deep sense of gratitude for everybody who, you know, coalesced to take care of everybody. So thank you. An understatement, but thank you.
Councilwoman Blair.
So again, thank you to everyone involved. It certainly seemed like a situation where when there's something bad going on, you look for the helpers, like Mr. Rogers says, and there were many of them that day. One question I had was, you've heard about the support in many ways being offered to the people who live in the building. Are there any relief funds available for the businesses that are affected? There's insurance, of course, they'll be going through that process, but is there anything short-term for these? Because I know there's some small businesses even in there that are certainly going to feel the pain here.
I think there's some conversations going on right now, and they're trying to do a lot of different things, thinking about what's insurance versus what they should necessarily have, like, fundraisers for, or also understanding how long people are going to be out and things like that. I am of the belief, and Mike, you can tell me if I'm wrong, that there is, I believe, a general belief that probably the commercial spaces may have the opportunity to open sooner than some of the residences would.
That's correct. Yeah. Obviously, the fire was on the top. The roof and the water damage or the water applied by the fire department didn't saturate the entire building down to the first floor, so the commercial spaces aren't as taxed as the upper residential units. So still they're going to need, you know, a vetting out and many inspections before they open, but I firmly believe that they will be opening before a lot of the apartments.
That's good to hear. I wasn't sure how the water really, like,
The challenge is going to be, though, is that it is at times going to be connected to what else is going on with the rest of the building. Because right now, I believe that the sidewalk is are people able to walk through or not?
No, the sidewalk's temporarily closed, and it will be for some period of time yet. And some of the the mechanical supply systems and stuff that go into the commercial units run through the building and go off of the roof. So there's some things that we're kind of working around and working with. So it may take some time.
And there's a possibility that they could be ready to go, but also they might be like, we'll wait another couple of weeks until the sidewalk's open, or, you know, things. So there's a bunch of those different things, but it's all of those factors are kind of being talked about and worked through as quickly as possible.
Thank you. Anything else from members?
Chief Reich, I had a quick question. Again, my thanks, as well as everybody else's thanks, to the incredible work to everyone, like EMS, fire, police, I looked pretty close, and seeing the ash spread around South Bethlehem was something to see, especially with how old the houses stock in Bethlehem is. So it's not just your diligence at the time, but in the aftermath, it was really great. My question is about what do we do for the firefighters after? How is their mental health? Granted, there were no tragedies in this event, which is great, but there was active fire. So what do we do for the mental health of the firefighters and the physical health of the firefighters in the aftermath of something as large as this?
Certainly. So as everyday operations, we have all sorts of like mental health assistance or whatever available to our firefighters, and that's from all different forms. It's through our human resources department, through the EAP program. It's through local emergency service-based counseling groups that are available for fire, police, EMS, and then certain incidents, if it's a very taxing, stressful incident, and it doesn't need to be large, it could be some examples of that. Maybe we had an incident where a young baby died, even though our first responders provided extraordinary life-saving methods, they still couldn't save that child. We've sometimes had a critical incident stress debriefing team come in, and it just lets folks get together and talk about it. And then there's even beyond that, the IFF has services available for firefighters if they need additional help. So there's all kind of avenues to address that need should it arise. And then for the physical well-being, I would say we just offer rehab services at the scene, and then we've also, through the Health Bureau and through Eric, has approved purchasing some fitness equipment at the stations. We have treadmills and things like that to look for their physical well-being as well.
And so when you said about like the critical incidents, is there something specific that triggers that? Is it like a fatality, or is it like the intensity of the fire?
Based on the need. We, you know, our officers all kind of watch our personnel, and our personnel watch each other, and our officers watch other officers, and if you see someone that maybe they're just, you know, off their game, to say, you know, they pass it on and let each other know. Or if I hear a call or another officer hears a call that sounds like it could be, we've been all doing this a very long time, so we kind of hear and get a sense for the type of incident that's like, hey, that was a really tough, really hard incident that we'll stop by and be like, hey, how you doing? Just ask how our folks are doing and judge from there what direction we go. Also, our personnel could ask. You know, they can ask HR, they can ask their supervisor, they can come to me, they can come to their union reps and ask for assistance, and we all work together to provide whatever assistance is needed.
And to add to that, just on a very base level, like, they also take care of each other. I think one of the things that, you know, Chief Reich kind of intimated at, but we see this throughout the city, is that nobody is too strong to talk to their friend or take care of each other and things like that. And one of the things that we are very serious about is establishing a culture of mental health and well-being. And I think one of the things that, you know, and Mr. Jimenez is, and the union leadership does a great job of like looking out for each other and understanding that like sometimes like you pull the guys aside that you've known for 10 years or 12 years or 15 years or 2 years and say like, hey, how are things going? Things like that. And, you know, they're not just kind of colleagues or friends, but they do look out for each other in a way. That's the most important thing, is that they care about each other more than just like this person I'm working with, and they deserve a lot of credit for that.
Thank you. Thanks, Chief.
Any other questions or comments for your Chief Wright or Mr. Simons? Mr. Cowan?
Chief, I want to thank you. I spoke to you down there. I was prior to voting for you, I had full confidence from the rank and file on you. It was probably after what I saw on that day, and I spoke to you down there, it's confirmed. I mean, you guys did an unbelievable job. My son Cody lives on the fifth floor here in corner unit. Mayor Reynolds, I know we've had run-ins and disagreements. Really appreciate what you did. I know you saw him down there and went over and talked to him. Spend some time with him. I appreciate that from the bottom of my heart. Seriously. But I was in a meeting with some business people downtown when I saw the pictures. First thing I saw was the pictures. A Holy shit.
She can't handle language.
I know. Excuse me. My son lived literally on the top floor. So I lost my wife to cancer. I cannot imagine losing a kid. I stepped out of the meeting. Luckily, within 10 seconds, I was on the phone. You out? Yeah. I won't. My daughter works down there. She's out. Good. They're across the street. I stayed out of the area. I don't want to go down there. A lot of chaos going down there. It was a very busy scene. I waited to the end of the day, you know, when everybody had some time. I couldn't have been more proud of not only the fire department, the police department, everybody. I walked across the street, talked to some, you know, firemen, and I walked back across to the sidewalk. There was people from the health department there. Asked me if I could, you know, they had no idea who I was. And I don't care. It's just, it was, they asked me, hey, are you all right? Did you need anything? Everybody did the right thing. As far as Ms. Leon's question, I don't want to speak for the firemen, but the ones I saw, it was like Secretariat just got done running a race. They do this for a living. You guys do this for a living. Not that you're proud of it or proud of that there was a fire or happy of it. But you guys were on and did exactly what you were supposed to do. And I think at the end, what I saw was almost, because nobody died and nobody was hurt, not even an animal. I talked to some of the firemen there. I couldn't, you know, they were exhausted. I think the one guy, he was there for maybe 8 hours. And he goes, you know, I want to go home, I'm exhausted. But he said, you know, it was a good day for us to show the city what we do. And it was, you know, terrible, terrible, terrible fire that exploded quickly. But so I want to thank all of you, you know, from the police department handling the traffic situation, everything. It was amazing. At Northampton Community College, amazing. I also want to say that the management company, Perone Development, the owners, don't quote me, there's either 94, 96 units in the facility. They have 74 units in Easton that they're moving the majority of those people to wherever they want to go. And Rocco from the Boyd reached out to me and said, please let your brother know and the people down there, if anybody needs a place to stay, he was going to give them $500 off on a room. Or no, first month rent, $500 for moving fees, and unlimited time to break the lease. Meaning, if at any time when the 510s is back open, they could break the lease and go back, no penalties. That's really what the community is about, to Bethlehem. I mean, it was business owners. Al Heffy was handing out water. Everybody just joined in, and it was an amazing thing to see. I mean, it really was. And I just want to thank Perone Development for everything. On Sunday, they let the residents go in, and I went down with my son. I can't believe 2 days after this event, they had probably like, I don't know, 100 or so workers in there helping people to carry their you guys had let them in that late in that first day to get prescriptions and things like that. But then on Sunday, they let them in for a three-hour period to get additional things like contacts or, you know, whatever. So I was down there to help my son out. I'm 62. I walked up and down five flights of stairs numerous times that day. I was exhausted. I can't even imagine being a firefighter with a 60-pound tank on and all the equipment and going up and down those steps all the time. It was an amazing thing, but Perone Development did a great job getting everybody in immediate housing in hotels, and now are working for everybody to get a more permanent housing until whenever they can get the 510 flats open. So I also saw Mr. Perucci down there, which I was shocked. I actually posted something on Facebook. I said, he was on vacation over in Europe. He flew back, left his family there. He flew back. He had no idea who my son was. No idea.
and he saw my son coming down with his hands full, and he said, hey, would you like me to carry, you know, this stuff to your car? He walks out to the car, and he sees this Callahan driving school line. He goes, are you a Callahan? And he says, yeah. He was doing that just beyond, not just with my son, with everybody. So I can't tell you how proud I am. I'm not just the firefighters, police department, but the management company and what they're doing to help everybody out down there. It's all about taking care of the residents there. So I don't get choked up talking about it, you know, because, you know, thank God I got a hold of my kid within 15 seconds after I saw the picture of the flames, because, I was really emotional about it, just hearing his voice and knowing, hey, he's all right. I lost my wife. That's the worst thing that ever happened. I always feel like I'm invincible. Nothing can stop me. Nothing can hurt me or harm me, because I've already had this pain. And the only thing that could ever come close to that is I've lost a child. And thank God that never happened. I want to thank all of you for that. So thank you very much.
Any other discussion as it relates to the fire, members of council? I'll just briefly echo my thanks to everybody. I was someone who was at the Performing Arts High School across the street, sent a photo to my office. Somebody rang my office and showed it to me, and it was scary. There were flames coming out. I was sitting in an office in Easton, so in the moment, I can't even imagine. I think it's one of those things, when we look back on it, that we'll all kind of remember where we were. I know members of council had reached out, and we were all communicating. I know a few members of council responded down there, and obviously the coordinated effort, not just by our own personnel, but as Chief Reich outlined, people were texting me that they saw vehicles from outside agencies coming in from all over in Wasted City. So while I hope in my lifetime and even that of my daughter, that we never have to experience anything like that again, I just share my thanks and gratitude for the people that were working that day and did it. So thank you. Anything else before I continue on with the agenda? Thank you, Chief Wright. We're still on the mayor's report. Thanks, Mayor Rowe. Councilman Francis Smith.
Finance Committee met on April 29th at 6 p.m. in Town Hall. There were 7 budget adjustments on the agenda and 2 items for procedural review. The Finance Committee voted to advance all 7 ordinances involving budget adjustments to Council tonight for first reading. Procedural review of accounts payable policy and procedures occurred. Some new policy and procedures are in place. Electronic bill payment is being pursued, and a continuous review of best practices and policies will continue. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilman. Moving on to ordinances for final passage, 8A.
An ordinance of the City of Bethlehem, Counties of Lehigh, Northampton, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, amending the general fund for 2025. Bill number 2225 is sponsored by Ms. Wilhelm and Ms. Laird.
Any discussion on the ordinance? Call the roll.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Pramsey Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Quintek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
And Mr. Colon?
Aye. Passes 7-0. 8B.
Ordinance of the City of Bethlehem, Counties of Lehigh, Northampton, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, amending the general fund for 2025. Bill number 23-2025 was sponsored by Ms. Wilhelm and Ms. Laird.
Any discussion? We'll call roll.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Pramsey Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Quintek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
And Mr. Colon?
Aye. Passes 7-0. Moving on to new ordinances. Mr. Miller, 9A, please.
An ordinance of the City of Bethlehem, Counties of Lehigh, Northampton, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, as known as the Zoning Ordinance of the City of Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, by amending the city zoning map. Bill number 21-2025 is sponsored by Ms. Wilhelm and Ms. Laird.
Any discussion? No discussion. Mark up, Councilman Laird.
So I am going to be voting not to change this amendment, or to change the map tonight. Sorry, I've got, allergies or something going on. So looking at the zoning and how it was designed and how it switched from back when there was steel space there to when the current owner, applicant,
purchased that space and advocated for the current zoning. I think that while I can understand the challenges of business development in terms of getting the type of business you want in a space and drive-ins being popular, the purpose of that zoning was to provide a walkable resource for the pretty large, fairly dense neighborhood right there behind it. And particularly, I'm concerned about putting in a business or two that one of the primary goals to make that business successful would be to get as many cars in and out as quickly as possible through a space next to a grocery store in a city where we struggle with walkable grocery stores. I do walk through that area. I walk to CVS pretty often. I walk to the grocery store. I walk to Lowe's. And I also see a fair number of wheelchairs, like motorized wheelchairs coming through there, I think from a facility up on Shanersville. And I know it's a busy area. It's not a great area to walk through already. And there's more going in where Martin Tower was, and it's near the highway, but it's still a neighborhood where people do walk to a grocery store and a CVS. So that's my rationale, and I will not be supporting the reason.
Thank you, Councilman. Any other discussion from members of council?
Thank you. I also will not be voting for this. Slightly similar and also some different reasons. I always think about these rezoning requests as having a pretty high bar because there was a reason why we zoned this way in the first place. But it also reminds me of the example of 119 Technology Drive, where the request was put to us that, you know, this was the only possible use we were going to be able to make from this, at that time, an existing building. This is obviously an even blanker slate than that. And in deciding not to rezone, we actually were able to give the space and time for something compatible with the zoning use to come to fruition and create dozens of good jobs and help with the rehoming of semiconductor industry. So, and the walkability piece is also a factor. I don't live far from there. I'm down, you know, south of that area, but it's an area that I frequent quite a bit, and I do want to leave that opportunity open for that kind of business and not just flip a switch and make that decision. So I'll be voting no.
Thank you. Any other discussion from members of council? Councilman Francis.
Yeah, as I said at the last meeting, usually I'm a stickler with rezoning, but I feel that this is appropriate because within that area we're looking at going to see a shopping district, and I really see it as a shopping district. We have Price Right right there, which is already zoned CS, so it seems like it's congruent with what is already there, and then you have Lowe's and you have CVS. While I'm definitely for walking, I have the opposite because I come in from either very close but from another way, and I have to drive because there's no sidewalks for me to get to this site from where I live. So I have the opposite experience, and I feel it would be good, especially, you know, a restaurant, but I think like a car wash, I think is really needed because we really don't have that many left in the city. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilwoman. Any other discussion from members of council? Councilwoman Leo?
I think the deciding factor for me was its proximity to the highway. It's one of the last projects that Darlene commented on before she left. And I think all the concerns that I have could be addressed with the applicant and the administration continuing to work together, that anything that has to do with walkability is considered in that area as it's developed. So I would encourage you guys to do that. Because that's the biggest concern that there is it's just the walkability of the area. So as the project goes and is developed, I would just encourage you to continue to consider walkability in that area and make sure that the spaces that are there are safer to walk going forward.
Councilman Ball.
I feel similarly, and on that note, I was wondering, Ms. Collins, if you would be willing to, because it was discussed at the last meeting that pedestrian safety would be considered, preserved, prioritized. Could you just kind of illuminate for us a little bit how those conversations can continue and the ways in which that can be the case?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I certainly heard some of those comments from the last meeting and, you know, had more conversations with our planning bureau and also Ms. Heller, who, although retired, is still very much a resource and working in the transition period. And I think there's nobody, I think we know more than Darlene Heller, perhaps maybe the mayor, who cares about walkability and is really committed to that. So raise that, you know, comment specifically. And, you know, she had, you know, similar comments to you and Ms. Leone that, you know, in the planning process, you know, we can look at, and there already are signalized intersections, you know, at 8th Avenue and Martin Court, and, you know, we can look at potential different design elements, but really the traffic that you already see coming through there is not significantly altered, even with a very car-centric use. I mean, you're just very close to 378, you're on 8th Avenue. You know, even the area that is CM, the remainder of the CM area, you know, I appreciate the point that its original intent was to have, I mean, I think it was intended to actually open up and allow more, you know, commercial, you know, planned office, commercial development type uses, not necessarily to have, like, non-car uses. I mean, the medical office buildings, the bank, CVS, you know, multiple, you know, those are car uses as well, but, you know, it's all about, I think, coordinating, you know, in design elements to make sure that walkers are safe, and I think that's, you know, something that you would be able to, you know, work on in this area while still allowing a use that is compatible with the CS immediately abutting, where you have Lowe's, where you have Price Right, and like I said, on 8th Avenue, where there's already cars, and near 378, where there's cars. So I think, you know, we feel comfortable from a planning perspective that it is compatible. LVPC has also noted, you know, its compatibility with the area. And while I recognize that rezoning is a big change, I think the CMU district is actually pretty unique. It's the only one in the city is here. I think it was originally CM, as Councilwoman Laird mentioned, when there was a former steel building. And you know, I think the idea 20-ish years ago was to develop, you know, more commercial type uses, and I think you've seen that play out in a majority of the parcel, and now there's, you know, over those 20 years, this last remaining piece at the bottom and closest to the CS district. I think it's a sort of funky shape. It's a, kind of, you know, it's furthest from the neighborhood. You know, it hasn't developed like the rest of it. It's sort of like topographically different as well. I think it sits down lower than the remainder of the parcel, so I think it's just a little bit differently situated, such that the rezoning and the intended use here, like, you know, really isn't a vast departure from what was originally intended or what would be appropriate for the area. It's a very long-winded answer, but I
appreciate it. And just to confirm that the business has not been determined yet. And a restaurant without a drive-thru is still permitted on this?
In the CMU district, yes.
And in the CS, though?
And the CS,
So that's not a guarantee that it would be a drive-thru. I was going to say something else. I guess that I do appreciate... Oh, that McDonald's was never discussed, correct? I don't remember ever hearing that, and I just want to make sure that I did not miss something, because I don't want to put things out there that are, you know, perhaps more alarming to some than that is true. I'll just add, thank you so much for that, you know, the property, there's nothing there, nothing located there now, nothing needs to be taken down, there's not a building that needs to sit and deteriorate, nothing being built that will sit empty for a while. I just want to comment relatedly, I suppose, that I do believe there are developers who really want the best for the residents of Bethlehem. I do believe they're out there. And in this case, I appreciate that conversations have happened already to investigate certain businesses, Cloud 10, the sustainable car wash, appreciate those steps. And I will ask for plead that similar attention, or perhaps even speedier attention, be given to properties, you know, considering to be developed that do have existing properties there that sit for a long time, and that the people walking by them every day feel that it really impacts the experience, the lived experience of residents of Bethlehem, or when spaces are built, perhaps large spaces that are not filled, that those ground floor spaces with the signs saying, you know, to be rented, just generally speaking, to attend to those spaces as well as a developer, so that you'd have a more positive impact on the lived experience of residents. It does have a big impact. So thank you for the attention that's been given to finding a good tenant business for this space, and ask that you do the same for other spaces as well.
Thank you, Council. Any other discussion from members of Council? If there is none, I will say I'm going to be supporting this evening. I hear the arguments for or against. At the end of the day, when I look at the opportunity costs and the impact, it's something that I'm comfortable moving forward with, recognizing some of the changes that we heard two meetings ago about just how the economy has changed, how the market changes, and how we look to continue to move that 8th Avenue corridor forward. So I will be supporting this evening. Anything else before we call the vote? All right, Mr. Miller, call roll.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
I'm going to be recusing myself. I looked through my financials when I was not on City Council. I guess the council had passed a financial donation ordinance, and the limit was $500, and that's the amount of money. I had received a $500 check from the individuals, and so I will recuse myself. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Callahan.
Ms. Grimson Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Quiatek?
Nay.
Ms. Laird?
Nay.
And Mr. Colon?
Aye. So it passes 4-2 with one refusal. 9B.
An ordinance of the City of Bethlehem, County Superior, Northampton, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, amending the Liquid Fuels Fund budget for 2025. Bill number 24-2025 is sponsored by Ms. Grimson Smith and Mr. Colon.
Discussion? Call roll.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Grimson Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Quiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
And Mr. Colon?
Aye. Passes 7-0. 9C.
Ordinance of the City of Bethlehem, Counties of Lehigh and Northampton, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, amending the 2025 capital budget for non-utilities. Bill number 25-2025 is sponsored by Ms. Ramsey Smith and Mr. Colon.
Discussion. We'll call the roll.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Ramsey Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Quiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
And Mr. Colon?
Aye. Passes 7-0. 9D.
Ordinance of the City of Bethlehem, Counties of Lehigh and Northampton, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, amending the Community Development Block Grant Fund for 2025. Bill number 26-2025 is sponsored by Ms. Ramsey Smith, Mr. Colon.
Discussion? Call roll.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Ramsey Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Quiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
And Mr. Colon?
Aye. Passes 7-0. 9E.
Ordinance of the City of Bethlehem, Counties of Lehigh and Northampton, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, amending the general fund budget for 2025. Bill number 27-2025 is sponsored by Ms. Ramsey Smith and Mr. Colon.
Discussion. Call roll.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Ramsey Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Quiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
And Mr. Colon?
Aye. That's 7-0. 9F.
Ordinance of the City of Bethlehem, Counties of Lehigh and Northampton, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, amending the general fund budget for 2025. Bill number 28-2025 is sponsored by Mr. Ramsey Smith and Mr. Colon.
Discussion. Call roll.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Ramsey Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Kubiak?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
And Mr. Cologne?
Aye. That's 7-0. 9-G.
Ordinance of the City of Bethlehem, Counties of Lehigh, Northampton, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, amending the general fund budget for 2025. Bill number 29, 2025, is sponsored by Ms. Ramsey Smith and Mr. Cologne.
Discussion? Call roll.
Ms. Leone?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Ramsey Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Quintec?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
And Mr. Cologne?
Aye. That's 7-0. And the last ordinance, 9-H.
Ordinance of the City of Bethlehem, Counties of Lehigh, Northampton, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, amending the general fund for 2025. Bill number 30, 2025, is sponsored by Ms. Ramsey Smith and Mr. Cologne.
Discussion? Call roll.
Ms. Leone?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan? Ms. Quintec? I'm sorry, Ms. Ramsey Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Quintec?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
And Mr. Cologne?
Aye. Pass 6-0. Resolutions. Resolution 10A.
Be resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the Council hereby approves the amendments to the rules and regulations recommended by the Civil Service Board of the City of Bethlehem on April 15, 2025, which are attached to the resolution as Exhibit A and which shall take immediate effect. Resolution is sponsored by Ms. Ramsey Smith and Mr. Cologne.
Discussion on the resolution. Call roll.
Ms. Leone?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan? Ms. Ramsey Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Quintec?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
And Mr. Cologne?
Aye. That's 6-0. 10B.
Be resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the Mayor and Controller and or such other city officials as deemed appropriate by the City Solicitor are hereby authorized to execute an agreement with J. O. Bradley Construction Company to install a total of 4 valves for 2 projects. The resolution is sponsored by Ms. Ramsey Smith and Mr. Cologne.
Discussion? Call roll.
Ms. Leone?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan? Ms. Ramsey Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Quintec?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
And Mr. Cologne?
Aye. Pass 6-0. 10C.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the Mayor and Controller and or such other city officials deemed appropriate by the City Solicitor are hereby authorized to execute use permit agreement with Arts Quest for the 2025 Taco Fest. Resolution is sponsored by Ms. Ramsey Smith and Mr. Cologne.
Discussion? Call roll.
Ms. Leone?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan? Ms. Ramsey Smith? Ms. Quintec?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
And Mr. Cologne?
Aye. Pass 6-0. 10D.
Be resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the Mayor and Controller and or such other city officials as deemed appropriate by the City Solicitor are hereby authorized to execute a use permit agreement with Mount Airy Neighborhood Association for the 2025 Bethlehem Rose Garden Farmers Market and the Rose Fest pop-up event. Resolution is sponsored by Ms. Ramsey Smith and Mr. Cologne.
Discussion? Councilman Blake?
Just an adjacent question here. I know that there was some conversation about advertising for this market and the logistical challenges of Broad Street, where there had been a banner, I think is way too wide to safely put a banner, and that the newer poles from PPL, the metal ones, cannot support those kinds of banners. Has there just been any progress with the MANA about how they can more effectively get the word out?
Ms. Stein has had a lot of conversations with Ms. Toulouse about this. You're correct about Broad Street being too wide, and even if you look at 8th Avenue, there's only one side of the street that have any type of structures to be able to hang it on. And then if you get over to Union Boulevard, as far as before you get to where all the trees are, as like you're going west, there's just not a lot of room to be able to put it either before you get too close to the lights. So there are some different conversations, I think, about putting up different, of the kind of like North Side of Lifestyle, like flags on some of the poles and things like that. But as far as getting the word out as well, I mean, we've had great success with some of the things that we've done creatively as far as Live in the Garden is concerned. The last time I looked, that thing had like 20,000 views or whatever. So we offered our creative sense as well. To Mana, if you would like us to be able to film any videos or get behind anything like that. It didn't seem like that was necessarily something they were interested in right now. But I said, you know, I'm here if you would like me to help out at all in that sense. But we think we're going to be able to get up those like the little banners there.
Okay, thank you.
Any other discussion on the resolution? We'll call roll.
Ms. Leo?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Ramsey Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
And Mr. Wilhelm?
Aye. That's 7-0. 10-E.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem, the Mayor and Controller, and or such other city officials deemed appropriate by the City Solicitor, are hereby authorized to execute communications ground lease agreement with Greenlight Networks PA LLC for use of property at 247 East North Street, also known as 248 East Garrison Street. Resolution is sponsored by Ms. Ramsey Smith and Mr. Duong.
Discussion.
Okay. I just had a question about this, about who Greenlight Networks are and sort of what the purpose of this is. I tried Googling them and found a company up in New England that apparently does Wi-Fi or internet or...
It's they basically just want to lease ground space for relay from poles that they have facilities on. So they're not on our tower, they're on poles.
Okay, and so are they going to be offering internet service in the city of Bethlehem?
I believe so, yes.
Oh, okay. So a new internet provider?
I believe so, yes.
All right, thank you. Okay. I'm sorry. Yeah, I just have another question too. So where is this located? Is this by Friendship Park area? Or?
Yeah, Garrison Street.
Right, where the...
Electrical building right there, yeah.
Okay. So they're going to be putting up new poles or...
No, they're just leasing ground space.
Okay.
That's all.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chappell. Any other discussion? Mr. Chappell. We'll call the roll.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Ramsey Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
And Mr. Cologne?
Aye. Passes 7-0.
10-F.
Resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem, the Mayor and Controller, and or such other city officials, as deemed appropriate by the City Solicitor, are hereby authorized to execute a donation agreement by and between the City of Bethlehem and Bethlehem Aquatic Club Incorporated, and such other agreements and documents as are deemed by the Solicitor to be necessary for the purpose of accepting a donation of permanent pool pavilion structure and memorial pool to be acquired and installed at the expense of Bethlehem Aquatic Club Incorporated. Resolution is sponsored by Ms. Ramsey Smith and Mr. Cologne.
Discussion? Councilwoman Laird.
I just want to say this is awesome. Yes, this is, I am very happy to think of a future memorial pool that has some nice shade for people to rest in. So.
Thank you. Any other discussion from members of council? Mr. Miller, call the roll.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Ramsey Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
Mr. Cologne?
Aye. Passes 7-0. 10-G.
Be resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem, the Mayor and Controller, and or such other city officials as deemed appropriate by the City Solicitor, are hereby authorized to execute an agreement with Fragondas LLC to advance plans for modifications to the city's wastewater treatment plant's final clarifier recirculation system, final design, including specifications suitable for bidding and construction services. Resolution is sponsored by Ms. Ramsey Smith and Mr. Cologne.
Discussion. We'll call roll.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Ramsey Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
Mr. Cologne?
Aye. Passes 7-0. 10-H.
Certificate of Appropriateness under the provisions of the Act of the Pennsylvania Legislature, Bethlehem Resolution, is hereby granted for 905 West Market Street to construct a new concrete patio enclosed by a stone veneer wall. The resolution is sponsored by Ms. Ramsey Smith and Mr. Blum.
Discussion? Call roll.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Ramsey Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
Mr. Cologne?
Aye. Passes 7-0. That concludes the resolutions. So as we voted earlier, new business. So we have to talk about rescheduling the next council meeting. I will accept a motion and a second to reschedule the second council meeting in May
to Wednesday, May 21st at 7 p.m. here in Town Hall, due to City Hall being closed on May 20th, as that is primary election day.
So moved. Second.
Motion by Councilwoman Leon, second by Councilwoman Wilhelm. Any discussion on the motion? We'll call the roll.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Ms. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Anderson Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Blair?
Aye.
Mr. Colon?
Aye. Passed 7-0. So the second City Council meeting for May has been rescheduled to Wednesday, May 21st at 7 p.m. here in Town Hall. Now continuing on to new business. Start with new business for members of council. Councilwoman
Leon? I had a couple of questions for Public Works, because there were some things that were brought up, and I was curious as to if there is in any internal capacity to help with sidewalks on the south side, or like what's that relationship like between Public Works and business owners and the sidewalks?
We're talking specifically just on the south side?
Oh, well, for right now, that was the question that was asked. He brought up the work on the south side that needs to be done there.
So. Yeah, that's being done via a grant that was secured. We've also done in the past sidewalk work replacement under CDBG programs. Other than that, obviously, sidewalks are fighting property owners' responsibility. As far as like doing the work in house, is that question? I mean, our crew, we have, for example, the bureau that could undertake that project that he mentioned. We have 18 rank and file in that bureau, and we have 120 properties to take care of during the construction season, cutting grass, repairing walls, rebuilding footbridges, etc., etc. So it's nearly impossible to take some staff and dedicate them for weeks at a time to do that project. That's why we bid that type of work out. And it isn't being done by a grant. So that's typically when we bid construction out, it's because we don't have either the expertise or resources or capacity to do it. Otherwise, we'd be sorry to do it.
Yeah, and so I was curious about that. And the other question I have, and I'm not sure, it's about the trees. So I'm not sure if that's you or anyone else within the administration. How often are the trees that are within our central business district kind of checked on? And if we see a tree that is dead or dying, how do we go about either reporting it as a community member or making sure that the city is getting it taken care of or contacting the property owner before it gets a hazard?
Much like sidewalks, we don't go around inspecting trees. Trees are budding property owners' responsibilities as well, and we trust that the property owners are maintaining them appropriately. However, if we come across a tree that obviously has an issue in terms of posing any safety concern or is a dying tree, or we receive a complaint, we certainly follow up with the property owner to address that.
Okay, thank you. And I guess my last question, I guess, would be for DCED. When we have a business owner who's relatively new, so obviously I'm going to talk about Soto Santis, he's been around a lot, he knows how to manage his properties, but when we have newer business owners, how are we making sure that they're aware that even if they're in a central business district, that the city does not replace their sidewalks or their trees so that they can, like, factor those expenses into their business? And also, is there any relief within the city for businesses?
It's spelled out in our city ordinances, which are also on our website. And quite honestly, it's not only in the city of Bethlehem, but all municipalities in Pennsylvania, and most, if not all, other states. Very few states take on the responsibility of care of sidewalks and trees.
And just to add that, Councilman Leon, is oftentimes you would hope that when the small business goes in, that the property owner, who's often not the small business, like relays to them that the responsibility is their own as the property owner and not the small business owner as far as replacing your sidewalks and things like that. Most times when you rent a building, that property management, if it's not like sweeping out in front, but as far as the sidewalk, the trees, like that level of work, infrastructure work, is the property owner's responsibility. And just because this topic has come up a lot, is like, there are occasional grant funds that help to be able to do sidewalks. There have been times in the past where, and I know that's one of the conversations that's happened downtown, as far as some of the sidewalk improvements that were done in 2015, I believe that was, correct, Mr. Alacol?
Yes.
Like, that was done in 2015, but it wasn't, and I'm going to get to what the systemic problem is here. That was a cost-sharing situation where the city split the cost with grant dollars, and then private property owners necessarily were supposed to match that. But the challenge was is that, like, we didn't do all the properties, because if you owned your property and you were keeping it up to a standard, you didn't need to improve it. So then the people that weren't keeping their properties up to a standard, because we care about our downtown, we then were like, well, we don't want them not to fix this. And it doesn't get to like a safety point of view, it's like an aesthetic point of view. So pretend, you know, Rachel Leon, you're doing everything that you can to keep up your property, which we like, and then you have another person, John Doe, that's not doing it, that when the city then did that, it was made clear to them as well, like, it's your responsibility here to keep this up in the future, even if there was this cost-sharing agreement moving forward. But the challenge, too, at that particular project is, like, we're still owed, like, $40,000, because there are multiple property owners down there in that cost-sharing agreement from back in 2015 that never paid their fair share. So then, like, the city gets stuck in that position. It's like, the whole reason why we wanted to do this was from the aesthetic reason, but then the taxpayers got stuck with this $40,000 bill, which just is like one of those things moving forward. But also, if racially owned property owner is spending the money, and with all due respect, it's usually not Rachel Leon, it's, you know, Leon LLC, or Leon Triple LLC, or RL3 Corporate LLP, or whatever it is. If you're not doing that, and like the city, and like if you do your part, somebody else doesn't do their part, then Mike Alcall's in kind of a stuck position here, as far as, like, we don't want some of these property owners that aren't doing what they're supposed to do to keep up the property, but we're also not about to let them pull up anything that makes it look aesthetically pleasing and put down some type of, like, stamped concrete or something that's, like, ugly that people are like, why would you ever allow that to happen? So it becomes a tricky kind of situation moving forward, both from encouraging you not to be able to invest in your own property, like, on some of these projects. Now, obviously, we get grant funds to be able to do some of them, but just some of the background there. And then, obviously, I mean, you own your house, I own my house. Like, we don't have, like, property owners often call us in other parts of the city and say, my sidewalk's broken, or I got to take the tree down, can you help me, and so on and so forth, which is part of the conversation. But an important structural part is the idea that, like, that cost-sharing agreement that went, like, 10 years ago, it didn't do everybody. It only helped the people that were delinquent in keeping their properties up to an aesthetic value that, like, the city thought was important. And then, yeah, at the end of the day, the taxpayer still got stuck with, like, $40,000. $38,000, Mike, is that what it is? $38,000, I believe. He's a numbers guy. Like, $38,000 that we are still owed, that then had to go through the whole process of liens and things like that on properties and so on and so forth. So, and this is not a shock, probably, that the people, that some of the people that still owe the money are also some of the people that have damaged sidewalks that didn't invest and so on and so forth. So it's just, it's like everything else. Like, you can come up with solutions. It's just tough from a systemic point of view. And that history is, I think, really important as far as thinking about where, you know, and how you necessarily apply for those grant dollars to be able to make that happen.
Yeah, and I guess one of the main concerns that I have, and this isn't something to be hashed out right here, it's just a thought process to go through, is it is my understanding that most of the businesses within the central business districts, the buildings are owned, as you said, by these corporations.
I believe I looked it up the other day, and out of the 35 properties that were part of this like cost sharing 10 years ago, like only like 10 of them are owned by like Rachel Leon. And like there's a whole bunch of them that are owned by corporate LLCs or LLPs or whatever it might be. And like I actually feel for a lot of the business owners, because the business owners have legitimate complaints about the idea that the property owners and the people that they're renting from are not investing in this property. And occasionally, if there's like a safety reason, like the city will go out and try to fix something because we don't want somebody to fall or something in the right of way and things like that. But there's people that take advantage of that too, thinking that like, I don't need to clean my sidewalk, I don't need to do this because I know somebody from the city will do this because they care about what the infrastructure looks like. So like I said, it is, I actually have a great deal of sympathy for some of the business owners that continue to ask the people that own the property, like, we want you to do this for our business. And some of them are great, some of them are not,
it's just a point of concern for me that a lot of times, as has been spoken about on council, that cost then gets put onto the business owner, which I don't believe it should be, but it is. And then so many times a business owner, especially a newer business owner, doesn't know what to expect. It's their first rodeo doing these things, and you can't always account for everything. So it's just a concern that I have. That I mean, I'll probably ask more questions at a later date, but that's all I have for it.
Any other new business from members of council?
Can I make a comment while we're on this topic?
I'm gonna. It's.
I mean, I just want to.
Yeah, go ahead.
Quick comment. So I get it. You know, it's not the city's responsibility, and I understand it. It's the owner of the building, and I just think that, you know, if you go down there, some of the on Broad and on Main, some of the side, it's a hodgepodge. I think we talked about that. Some of the sidewalks are cement, which is a lot more durable. Some are brick, and then some are slate. And the ones that are slate, I think they were the original, you know, sidewalk, and they, by the heart, they weren't allowed to change them. So my only ask is this, is that the business owners, everybody in Main Street, administration, council, everybody in the city knows that with the number one Main Street designation, and also with the UNESCO designation, we're probably going to be getting a lot more people on our Main Street. And I think it's really important that we put our best face on, so when people do show up to Main Street, that it wows them and it doesn't deter them from ever coming back. I had a conversation with a bunch of business owners on the day of the fire. I was actually in that meeting. That was a meeting I was in. And they have some asks and wants, and I think some of them are really simple. I don't think it's going to cost much money. They want to leave the lights on, you know, at nighttime. I think we talked about that, you know, a few months ago. Leaving the lights on at nighttime, you know, that are in the trees. That's a simple thing. But the sidewalks, I don't know. That's going to be an issue. You guys are going to have to work out, and whether you guys go out to the property owner to fix the sidewalks, because I sent some pictures to Ms. Collins, and I think you got them too, and some of you, Mr. Alcohol. There's 17 different pictures of the slate sidewalks that are completely broke, and it are probably going to be a little dangerous to walk on. And the 17 I did take pictures of, they need immediate repair. So I think the other thing that came up with the meeting I had is all the property owners or all the business owners down there, and this isn't me saying it, this is them saying it, they're all down 20-30% this year, every single one, some of them more than that. Most of the reasons why they think is because of the garage, which is understandable.
Not sure.
Yeah, I'm just telling you what they told me, all right? But and you've had conversations with them. So they just feel like, and I actually said to them, I said, well, you know, we had a really rainy spring. Maybe that's it also, but I'm just telling you what they told me, that they're all down 20-30% or more, and they're struggling, and they don't. Some of them who own the buildings don't have the money to put into the sidewalks, which I get, because they're struggling. And three of the business told me that they're, I will not mention their name, that they're not only struggling, they're on the verge of closing down. And I think anything we can do as a city to help clean up the Main Street and Broad Street area, I know it would be a great benefit to all those businesses down here, especially with the difficulties they've had with a variety of things, whether it's the rain or the parking situation or whatever. But I know that they do have I don't know if they sent it to Mr. Marietta, but they are going to send you a short list of things that they do would like to see immediately, and then they have another list of long-term things, and I think a couple of things are the sidewalks and planters on the, you know, which you guys know about. They want to put the planters on the lights, and then also the leaving the lights on at nighttime for the And I think the lights, leaving the lights on at nighttime would be an awesome thing. Mayor Dodges kept them on, and I know you had some discussions about turning them off at some point and turning them back on. And I just think that during the nighttime hours with that downtown, if you go to any major area, historic area, or whatever, whether it's you go to Fort Lauderdale, you go to Miami, you go to Stone Harbor and Avalon,
it just adds a vibrancy and a mood that uplifts people. It just makes the downtown look a lot nicer. I think that's something that we could do immediately. If I don't know who you would have to talk to about that to get that done, but.
So just to add to that, a couple things is Mr. Ziller and Ms. Collins have been talking to the DBA for months about a lot of these kind of wants and needs. And one of the things that we are trying to talk to them about is like, what are the one-time costs versus what are things that need sustainable plans moving forward, things that come up like trolleys or things like that. But we are hopeful that, you know, based on some of our recent conversations, is that we might be able to find some equivalent grant funding to be able to replace the light poles, which will be a huge step moving forward, because that will allow for things to be hung on the light poles that can't be done now, that fix the bases and things like that. So like we're working on some of that. So we had sent a memo last week, I believe it was, that I believe, I wasn't at the meeting, but there was a merchant meeting this morning that I believe Mr. Gardner had positively referenced, like that looked at a lot of the needs. And then we kind of looked at like, is this the type of thing that's like a city responsibility or a one time or a sustainable? And then what we're looking for from them is an understanding of like, what's the kind of like, and I'm making this up obviously, but like, what's the top agreed upon priority? Because one of the things that I've been around, I'm sure the same way, is you hear from different businesses that they want different things. They say, this is the number one priority, this is the number one priority, this is the number one priority. So we have sat down with them before. I went to a DBA meeting, I think it was a month or two ago, and I said, if you guys want to come up with some type of like strategic plan, like we'll help to partner on that. But if you want to do it a different way, like it's your DBA, you guys make your own decisions on how you want to do that. But we are hopeful that we should be able to, at some point in the next, you know, month or so, be able to announce that we have been able to hopefully find some funding, which is a city responsibility. That's 100% a city responsibility. None of this conversation about is the business owners or not is like the light poles are city infrastructure and city responsibility. So that seems to be something that a lot of people are in agreement on. But more than that, we've been trying to get DBA to focus on the idea that like if you want some of these things, they require some type of sustainable plan. And like the one that comes to my head most is like a trolley that often comes up as a conversation. So you got to buy it, but you have to have a maintenance. Where you're going to park it? Who's going to drive it? All those type of things are part of a plan that like we will help together if that's then like priority number two or whatever it is. So like that's kind of been the conversation that we've been having, as far as like this is a one-time thing, or this is if the lights for example moving forward and things like that. But we're, and Mr. Ziller and Ms. Collins are just having almost daily conversations as far as like what's the best way to move forward in that regard.
In the future though, is it possible that they pay a business tax? And I don't know if it's possible that something that during budget season, It would make sense to me that with the designation with the UNESCO and all stuff, that it's probably going to be a yearly thing that we're going to have to do, you know, to help upkeep, you know, the Main Street area. I think, you know, the idea that they had about the plants on hanging from the lights is awesome, and the lights staying on year round is awesome. But if we could possibly take some of that business tax for those businesses on 3rd and 4th Street in our central business district area and on Main Street, and maybe like allot some of that money to I think Mr. Yasso, I think he said it was $10,000, but I think we're going to have to all make a decision at some point. We're going to have to put a little bit more money into that fund to help keep that area, you know, as bright as possible.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the things too that we've been focusing. I'm sorry, was there a question there?
No, I just wanted to say, sorry. Ironically enough, I've had a lot of people talk to me, business owners, and they said, can we use some of the business tax money? And I'm thinking, well, sure, we're using it, you know, other ways. But then we had the finance committee meeting last week, and we were saying that we're over for, the tax fund is overperforming, and it's double what it was last year. So I know maybe it's earmarked for other things, but if it's doing so much better this year than last year, I'm thinking, can we earmark some of that money? Because the other thing is, I know money's an issue, but with the designation, tourism, summer is coming up. So if we don't do things now, I know the businesses have said this, and I'm thinking the same thing. If we have people come in and we don't have the Main Street and Broad Street and the South Side looking good, God forbid people come by and be like, okay, we're not going to come back, and we don't want that to happen.
Yeah, and I would agree. And just a couple things to finish my thought there is, Mr. Callan, that's part of the reason why I've encouraged and the Park Authority started to put more of their money back into both the DBA and the Chamber and Southside Arts District is the idea that, like, if these are costs associated with their downtown that customers are paying, to be able to increase how much money is going back into the area. And that's something that the Park Authority Board in particular has been positive about, which I think is a real potential going forward. I think that all of these conversations come down to, and just to answer your question, Councilwoman, is, you know, when we have funds that are running ahead of whatever we budgeted, because we do budget conservatively, it just becomes, there's nothing that doesn't stop us from saying, like, okay, this is where we are through June. We think we'll be this way through December if we're moving things. But a couple things to think about is, like, I'm just saying this rhetorically, are we moving as a one-time expenditure? Are we doing moving as a sustainable expenditure? Because as we often say, is like, essentially every year in January, we have a new $2 million problem because our police aren't working for 0%, our fire's not working for 0%, our pension goes up. So, like, a lot of our financial success over the past 20 years has been about that. That's not to say that somebody might not say, you know what, it's a priority, let's move $50,000 from here at this point in June or July. It's just something we don't like to do in the middle of the year because you don't know what's going to happen. There are years when those things are running hotter at the beginning or not. We look at them. Obviously, Eric shares that with people as it's going on. But that's the only hesitation to be able to do in the middle of the year. Like, generally, it's more comfortable to be able to do it during budget time. But, like, those are obviously ongoing conversations. It just comes down to piggyback on what Mr. Callan is saying as well, is, like, what is it that we want to spend? Like, if you get $50,000, like, what becomes the top priority? Like, what is it that business owners want? And for a long time, there have been mixed messages as far as, like, some businesses will call and say, the number one thing is the planners or we want this or that and so on and so forth. That's what we are trying to get from the DBA and from those business owners, is some type of, like, coherent priority list that if you decide to move $50,000 to pay for something 6 months from now, they don't come back and some say, oh, we wish you spent that $50,000 on something else. But, like, we have been very honest with them for months about, like, this is how we go about each one of these things. We just want to know which of these are your priorities. And quite honestly, like, they haven't always agreed on it. We think we've found some progress on, like, these light poles being something most people agree on. But that's kind of some of the dynamic as well. But to answer your question, there's nothing that doesn't stop you from moving that if you're ahead of budget. You're just being a little risky because you don't know what else is going to come up.
And I understand that. It makes sense. I'm just thinking because in the finance meeting, we're almost $400,000 above where we were last year. So that's pretty significant. So if we could do some, and I get that not everybody will agree, but I think we get input from the businesses. And then if they can't agree, then we have to make a decision what we think is a priority. The other thing I wanted to ask about was some of the businesses said that there was a public works person, like, assigned for Main Street and to do the garbage and things, and that's not always happening.
So Kenny goes down there a lot, and you know, Kenny works on Main Street, but the way, like, it was designed for Kenny's work is the idea that, like, this is kind of my conversation I have with Councilwoman Leone as well. It's like, if you take care of your property and clean up all your leaves and things like that, like, that's great. And Kenny walks by and he's like, there's one brick that needs to be fixed. So he'll fix that and so on and so forth. He gets down there to be able to help out. But a lot of the functions that people want Kenny to be working on are, like, his, like, secondary responsibilities there and not his, like, primary responsibilities. Because what ends up happening again is people are like, I'm not going to do my fair share, and I'm just going to let Kenny come through. But there's just too much for Kenny necessarily to do. So, like, he gets down there, I think, depending on what's going on with other needs, paving, it's kind of connected to the fire and so on and so forth. I think often it's, you know, we think it's like 3 times a week, you know, roughly, depending on what else is going on. Mike, is that correct?
Yeah, at least sometimes more.
Yeah. If
we're not down.
Yeah. And there are some functions that becomes Kenny's, like, primary functions, because, like, the light poles, they're city primary functions. But it is just, you know, it is a situation where, depending on what's going on, that person may have other responsibilities, like if we're trying to finish a paving thing, get out of somebody's neighborhood or whatever it might be. But Kenny gets down there on a regular basis.
Okay, good. I just have 2 more things to clarify. Mr. Alcall, so on the south side, because I know the one person asked about the sidewalk, what sidewalks will be repaired on the south side of the grant? Do you know what streets by chance?
It's on 4th Street. Columbia and Broadhead?
Yes.
Columbia and Broadhead, okay, so it's pretty far.
Yeah, and it's, then, Wherever there's deficient sidewalks, not a complete replacement.
Right, but like even with there's bricks missing, things like that, because that's some of the complaints, okay? And then can whoever is in charge of the forester, can they have the forester look at the trees on South 4th Street? Because some of them, they're pretty big, and they I think they are a hazard. I looked at them last week.
Yeah.
Over by, yeah. And then on, I think, Broad Street, there's some, and they're small, but they're also, you know, they're
Where
also...
on Broad Street?
Yeah, they're small trees, but they're, I think, they're cacti. I think up by Broad and Getter, between Getter and Main on Broad. But I think it was more up by Getter that they were dead ones.
You can look.
Okay, that'd be great. Thank you.
Councilor
Yeah, so before you go away, can the sidewalks or trees be included in any of the facade improvement programs? Maybe that's a little bit. Like, if you need assistance repairing your property owner, you have a sidewalk that's in need of repair. Is that considered like part of facade?
I don't think so.
Okay. And those, you said you can report them, just to make sure that we're clear, that can go through, if someone sees a dead tree,
yes.
If someone sees a sidewalk issue.
Yeah, you can either email or use the app or call.
Okay. And then, sort of along those lines, but definitely for Ms. Collins, we had talked about, you had a great presentation about the rezoning processes. That you showed a slide that showed all the different moving parts that come together, et cetera. And somewhere in this conversation, there was a discussion of, well, does the business know that the sidewalk is the property owner's responsibility or things along those lines. And we hope that property owners are telling people, but they don't always. Could there be, we had talked about maybe putting the zoning education piece out in public, like as a little video or a slideshow or something, even a PDF to download. Could there also be kind of a basics of property ownership piece put together? That goes over like, yes, while not everywhere that you've lived are you in charge of the sidewalk in front of your house. In Bethlehem you are. And here's the tree process. Like, and I know we have in-depth brochures on the tree thing, but just like, you know, everything in today's world is little tidbits, right? People want easy to digest access to information. And I'm wondering if we could put some initiative into getting that information out there in an easy to digest form.
This, we absolutely can. It just becomes, obviously, with everything else going on.
Right.
This is something that Ms. Collins, I didn't even have to look, I knew was looking at me about. Because, like, this is something I often talk about, is like, how do we present complicated municipal information as clear as possible so people understand what by right development means, what they understand about what the Zoning Hearing Board does, because all of these different things have, like, tentacles that, like, reach out at different times. So it's absolutely something we can look at. It is something we have looked at. I'm just being completely honest, it's like there's only so many people to do the work. So then when things like the fire comes up or whatever, it hits it off, especially in Ms. Collins' department. But it is one of the priorities for me to be able to produce something that is going to be able to answer these questions that's able to be shared easily. And we're working on one for like homeless services. We are working on one as far as development is concerned, that also then people that do understand it, like don't have to get into like social media arguments about how zoning works. Like you're able to just be like, yoink, like share this kind of like flow chart as far as things are concerned and stuff like that. It's just that we, with all of the different things going on, we haven't been able to do it, but it is an absolute priority, I think, to be able to get like consumer education from here to here as far as like how these things work, including with small businesses or property owners or whomever it might be.
Right, and I recognize that there, you know, time goes into creating resources like that. I would hope that if the time is found to invest in creating materials like that, it could save time down the road for people who are, you know, answering a phone call, answering that question five times.
Yeah.
where instead somebody might just see the resource floating around.
Can I just add that? I mean, so on the point about like the land development and zoning process, that's something that doesn't exist. But also part of the challenge is getting people to like go to the website to resources that already exist. Like I think you'll find in the housing space, like, you know, there's quite a bit of information online about how our rental processes work and what obligations are for property owners, and, you know, covers a lot of this information. And, you know, maybe we can continue to evaluate if it can be condensed more or are more user-friendly, but I would quite say rest assured, like, that information does exist already. And, you know, likewise, there are resources online for small businesses and, you know, welcome packets and things like that. And so, you know, I guess there's two-part, you know, challenges that we can continue to think about. It's not only creating the resources, but also, you know, getting people to go to them, right? Like, it exists in the ordinance, those are all available. It exists on the website and condensed form, and those are available. It can get, you know, in some instances, we send things directly to people, and it doesn't get read or digested. So.
And that becomes a big challenge, too, that also sometimes it's, like, willful. That people will say, well, some people are saying, or I'm hearing in some places, and then we provide all of the factual information, and people choose not to retain it and also choose not to share it or not even pay attention to the conversation because it disproves whatever point they're trying to make, which is also like a struggle for us because sometimes, like, we run out of ways sometimes to say, like, 1 + 1 = 2 and things like that. But these are the type of projects, too, that sometimes we're able to use, like, community fellows for, or things like that. But also these one-time kind of costs are also sometimes why the most economical sense is not for Ms. Collins to stop working on this thing that needs to be done tomorrow, but it's you pay somebody outside a nominal fee to create something that's worth the dollars that doesn't take away from the work that's going on. And we've had an incredible success with being able to do that, where it's not like we need to hire a new person to do this, or we need to put one more thing on Ms. Collins or somebody there, but rather this is like, this is when you make the decision to be able to pull somebody in to work on a project for 6 weeks or 8 weeks to consult with the city on what the best way is forward to be able to provide this particular thing that then we can turn around and point to and say, like, that was a good use of $7,000 because now we have this educational tool that we're able to use for.
Yeah, I do understand we're in a world where we're fighting through all of the information overload that everyone's getting, and, you know, encouraging people to read something or go to a web page is a challenge. But, you know, just as these questions came up, I was like, maybe just something simple out there. Okay, that's my only question for you. My only other question is for Chief Cott. Are you aware, is there anything you're anticipating imminently as fallout from the executive order on policing that was put out there? That, are you seeing any, you know, immediate impacts on how business is going in your department, or, you know, are you aware of things that you're bracing for? Or?
Nothing right now at this time. However, things have been very dynamic coming down from Washington, so it's something that we continue to monitor, but nothing at this time.
We've referenced several times the CALEA accreditation, and that holds our police to a higher standard than many departments. Is that something that the accreditation can help insulate the department in any way from any wild changes out there in the...
It could. It absolutely could.
I would add to the two is, like, CALEA is about the people that are working for you as much as anything else. So it's not just about the policies, but the training and all of the things that our police go through. Like, you're producing good people. So, like, the idea that CALEA has helped us to produce fantastic police officers, like, that's not going to, that part's not going to change as far as their discretion and their judgment is concerned. Chief is correct, we don't know exactly what's going to happen, but the most important thing is that we have, like, the best police officers that we can because of the CALEA training. Like, you can't undo a lot of that.
But at this moment in time, recognizing that things can change in a heartbeat, there's no mandates that you're looking at, like, we have to, you know, we're now being ordered to do X, Y, Z thing that we want to do.
Correct.
Right. Thank you.
Any other new business from this council? Councilman Kreitek.
I don't have any questions. I just want to give some thanks. Mr. Alcohol came to the west side and met with some residents on a block where they've seen quite a few unpleasant things happen to their cars over the last few years, and sat down and broke bread with folks who I think were just in awe that someone from the city came and sat down to talk to them, but also really listened to them and gave them some very thoughtful responses. I know that Chief Cott was under the weather that night, but Mr. Alcohol, thank you for saying you'd follow up with Chief and talk about the pieces that are more on the law enforcement side of things. I just really appreciate that. And I also want to thank you for the help for the Eagle Scout project that's part of the library, the bike racks, helping to facilitate getting those fixed up. That's also really great that you're able to do that. I really appreciate that. And just again, Chief Wright, thank you so much. I didn't say this during the whole conversation because Mr. Callahan's contribution was so thoughtful, and I'm so glad that his son is safe and that everybody's safe. But you know, working where I worked, I just walked over. I knew there wasn't anything I could do, but I just sort of stood there behind the lines and I didn't talk to anybody. Chief Wright probably had no idea I was even there. I was watching him over in that corner the whole time. but watching the guys from L2 and seeing our firefighters work so hard. I saw a police officer interact with the mother of a resident who the resident had been there, was only concerned that his kitten was in his apartment, took the number of the apartment, made sure, you know, to convey that so that that cat would be looked for. So I know that you said that all of the animals were safe, and I was glad to hear that because that mom seemed like her son was very upset. And Mr. Simonson, everybody, I just watched, it was like this amazingly choreographed ballet of everybody knowing what they needed to do, doing what they needed to do, taking care of each other. I watched as the guys, you know, came down and took their oxygen off, and the Nancy Run Fire Department handing them water, and you know, it was something to behold. And I never want to see it again because I never want to have another four-alarmer here in town. But I again thank you so much for all of the work, all of our first responders on that day.
Any other new business from our council? Scout?
Yeah, I just have two things. So, you know, at the finance committee meeting, we had a lively discussion about some things. I just want to make sure everybody understood where I'm coming from, right? I wasn't on council at the time. I think it was the first year of Mr. Reynolds of your mayorship. I'm not blaming you, but at that time, our solicitor, I mean our controller, whose only job is to make sure that the city is following fiscally sound financial processes. He found out that, or noticed, no one tipped him off on it. It was something that he found by researching and seeing things. He found that a city employee, who Mr. Evans is, he worked hand in hand with you, just as you do with Ms. Lecharge now. And you know, you guys are together every day. And I'm not blaming you either. But he found it and came to the administration and said, hey, here's this pack of evidence that I have of something that's going wrong. And police were called in, he was escorted out, as he should have been. He was prosecuted and he was found guilty. So that was because of the work that he does. And that's his job. That's what he is elected in office for. So the thing that stumped me, because I went back and I watched the video again, and he stated that, you know, he went to you again, I guess a year ago, and had some concerns about some financial practices that were going on. He said that in his eyes needed to change. And you, and I appreciate
everything that you guys did with the, you know, presenting to the finance committee last week of how you're going to change it now. But my point was, all I was asking was this: when he came to you over a year ago and asked you, you know, to address these things, there apparently wasn't any response for a very long period of time after several meetings. And I think you had said, which I get, you know, that I think your quote was that, you know, sometimes we butt heads on some things and we don't see eye to eye, and we're going to have to agree to disagree sometimes. And I get that, because there's times up here when we have to agree to disagree on things with administration also. But having come out of that situation just 2 years prior, a year prior, with the individual that was working with you who was found guilty of stealing from the city, now the controller comes to you again. I just had thought that we would have been a little bit more hypersensitive, and the administration would have been a little bit more hypersensitive that, hey, the controller's coming to us again with some issues that he thinks needs to be addressed. And all I asked was, when he told you about it, did you tell the mayor, did you notify the mayor and administration, and your immediate supervisor about it? And you didn't want to answer it. And I really went home and I said, does anybody think this is an unfair question? I didn't think it was an unfair question. I thought it was a very pertinent question. Did you keep that information to yourself, or did you notify the mayor? And it was, I wasn't playing gotcha. It was just something like, at what point did everybody become aware of this to fix it? Why did we have to go through a year, according to him, a year ago, he started talking to you guys about fixing these procedures. I know they're now being fixed now because you guys presented it, but that was a whole year of things that could have gone wrong that I just think, you know, having had just a year ago before, when he came to you and found something that was highly unethical, not on your part, on the individual's part, I just think that when he, and that's his only job, is to monitor the financial services of the city. I thought it was a very fair question. Well, when you were notified of it a year ago, and then a couple months later, and a couple months later, because it was in multiple meetings, right? Did you notify the mayor and your supervisor, which is the mayor? And you didn't want to answer it. And so I'm asking it again. Did you notify when you found out? Did you keep it to yourself, or did you tell the mayor about it? It's a yes or no. And I'm not playing gotcha with you. It's just that I just think waiting a year to handle this process, that the controller is saying, hey, there, I got a red light on some of these things here. I think waiting a whole year, there's a lot of, if it was another situation, who knows what could have happened? That's all I was asking. So I don't know if you want to answer it now or
there. I'll just interject real quick. I understand this was a long debate topic about finance, so I just don't want to hear the same thing repeated multiple times.
No.
That is my ask.
That's all I got to say. I'm just asking the question. Did he notify the administration and the mayor about it? That's all.
Understood.
So, and I will answer this shortly and not repeat what goes on. It's like, Mr. Evans and Financial Services obviously work very closely with the controller's office. They are constantly talking to each other. I believe the line that was used the other day when they were, because I think it was the conversation that I ran into Mr. Yasso and Mr. Evans on Friday about the PPNL, like late charges that then didn't become late charges, that they were posted, you know, like 72 cents or $1.02 or whatever. And I think the line that both of them, like, we talked to the mayor about structural problems, about systemic problems and things like this. These issues are not, like, as far as, like, some of this stuff is concerned, like, it's just, it's the things that they work on a daily basis. There were different personnel changes. There were different personnel disagreements between the two parties that I was aware of as far as people within the offices are concerned. But I would say, and I believe, and Mr. Spurk, you might remind me, if it was February or March of 2022 when we were here, like, February, when we were here like a month, when this situation with Mr. Sivek occurred. And that was the situation that was the structural issue that he had responsibility over, like these cell phones, in a way that shouldn't have existed. A lot of the things that are, and I don't want to put any words in Mr. Yasso's mouth, but that is discussed between the financial services and the controller's office
is just what's the most efficient way to do this, not the idea that there's fraud or someone's stealing or whatever and so on and so on. Like, both of those things involve sentences that have the word money, but like, it's not really an apples to apples comparison here as far as, you know, does one employee have responsibility here that's signing off on these checks and so on and so forth. Like, those are issues that if they would pop up and Mr. Yasso would say, hey, look, like, over here in this department, we need to come, I'm making this part up, we need to come up with a second check signer, we need to somehow come up with somebody so this person doesn't have access. Those are absolutely the type of things that, like, somebody comes and says, hey, look, and once again, I don't even want to throw any department or bureau out there because it's not true, but I think you get my point. Like, those type of things are like, okay, like, what are we going to do to be able to solve that structural problem in the near term? Things like efficiencies, though, in which, like, how are we utilizing technology, or how are we writing checks, or if there's a 73-cent late fee, like, how do we necessarily keep track of that? That's much more of, like, the day-to-day operations between these two offices that doesn't get to my level. There are things that the controller talks about, as I said, that could be like, hey, we should look at this, or he sits down with Eric and he says, hey, look, this is something we need some more controls over because the city's done this for 50 years and it's not the best way to do it. And I think Mr. Yasso would say that we've really improved the contracting process, we've improved a lot of different processes going forward. But there's a certain level of things that we sit down and talk about, and there's a certain level of things that just don't get to me because I don't have time. And as far as the conversation, which I believe occurred the other day, as far as like the late fees are concerned and things like that, the PP&L 72 cents turned out not to be 72 cents. They gave a credit to us. Those aren't type of things. I mean, we hired Joe, who's a great employee, who's been doing a lot of good stuff. He's a real improvement on the person that was working there previously that no longer works for the city. So on a structural level, like, things are moving forward, I think in a positive way. But to those, like, individual situations, like, there is a level it's got to rise to. And obviously, if there's a situation like Civac, and I'll never forget when George came in, he said, Willie, I gotta talk to you, like, about this thing. And it was 4:15 or whatever, and I said, okay, I'll come talk to you right away about it. Like, there's a level of urgency on that situation that, like, that just doesn't happen on, like, this is an efficiency that we're working on between the way in which we necessarily write checks.
So that's the only question I asked, is that he had brought it up over a period of a year many times, and it wasn't being addressed. And so I just had asked Mr. Evans, at what point did you notify the mayor? And I would think that if it was that big of a deal that he had, that the controller had to keep on going back to Mr. Evans about it, it's not just a minor day-to-day minutia thing that they deal with on a regular basis. I think it rose to a level where you should probably have been notified of it. That's all. That's all I was asking. I asked him, did you notify the mayor about it? And he didn't want to answer it. So that's all I was asking. I didn't want any bad feelings over it or nothing. I thought it was a very simple question. And us as city council, that's our job, you know? So I thought it was a fair question. So if anybody took offense to it, I apologize. Right?
I just want to clarify again. It was a long meeting, and I don't want to continue this, but to clarify, I mean, just within a week period, there were late fees of $120, so that's significant, and there was a missed discount of $1,400, so it wasn't just cents, but nonetheless, I think we had a very productive meeting as far as the changes are being made, which is a plus, and they're continuing to be made. And I reviewed the meeting too, because I think people were upset. And as I said, is I think as council people, we have the right and responsibility to ask difficult questions. And if anything, I have to say, Mr. Callahan was just asking one question, and for some reason, it was just being avoided. And if anything, maybe as a chair, I should have made that question be answered, but I didn't, because obviously it was very uncomfortable for people. I don't know why. But it's over, we had the meeting, I think that we made some headway, and we are making some improvement with accounts payable, and hopefully we'll continue to do that.
Thank you.
Are we moving on from that, Alice?
Yeah, this is my last item of the night. So anyways, it's a not easy conversation to have here, but I had heard about it. I was on a council, I had heard about this at the time. I saw it posted on Lehigh Valley Ramblings, and at the time, but I didn't really get into it. But there was a flyer that went out recently, and it reignited my questions about what happened here.
So I just want to, I cleared it with the solicitor that I'm allowed to read this because it was also published already, and it's a firsthand account. So this is from Lucy Lennon. This is a business owner and a realtor in the city. She posted this on her Facebook and also sent it to Lehigh Valley Ramblings. This is her firsthand account of what happened. This ain't from me. And I'll read it verbatim. First off, let me apologize for the length of this post. It's a doozy. I'm writing this for many reasons, for the protection of my clients and for my own safety and peace of mind. Let me begin. I'm a realtor who proudly calls Bethel my home, both professionally and residentially. I'm quite outspoken in my love and appreciation of the city, its employees, small businesses, communities, schools, and residents. I've always felt that City Hall was a great resource for me and others to guide us through permits, zoning, and development. And now more than ever, it's all changed. Now the mayor and the Economic Development Department have become actual obstacles in my ability to make a living and my clients' ability to choose whom they do business with. Ethically, not what I would expect from my elected city officials. As you may know, I have 3 churches and 1 parking lot listed for sale, the parking lot being a large piece of property in the city that the city has an eye on for over 20 years. These churches are facing a financial crisis, and in order to continue with their service to God, the community, and the ministry, they have made a decision to sell their properties and merge to a new location. The city has approached the churches through the members themselves, myself, and various methods. I personally was told and informed to inform any and all interested parties that the city was interested in the property, and if another interested party had ongoing or projected projects that they had going on in the city, to remember that they would have to deal with the city. I was also informed personally that if their offer was not accepted, they could always take the property through eminent domain. The mayor said this with a chuckle, shared with a member of the economic development team. I showed the property to both developers and other nonprofits. 2 developers who were very interested and wanted to submit an offer told me in no uncertain terms that they were told to back away from the city. An additional developer's realtor insinuated the same. In the end, 3 offers were submitted. The winning offer was hands down better for my clients in terms of timing, lack of contingencies, and pricing. The churches, with their attorney's blessing, voted unanimously to reject the city's offer and accept an offer from another nonprofit. Fast forward, the churches have now received notice that the Bethlehem Parking Authority will be filing to take the property by eminent domain. This would be, in essence, potentially create a delay, if not a cancellation of the contract to sell to the buyer, and cause a financial catastrophe for the church's future. Here are my questions. When did it become okay for the mayor and his administration to dictate who buys or sells property in the city of Bethel? Is the city of Bethel now in the real estate business? When did the threat of eminent domain become a weapon? You may ask why I'm bringing this to light now. I now fear for my clients may be bullied into bankruptcy or financial and spiritual ruin. I worry that my other clients may now experience difficulties in City Hall. And me personally, I'm not quite sure what they can do, but so far I've seen vindictive and unprofessional behavior and can only make one wonder. And she says, please share. So I saw that, and I hope that's not true, but from talking to her individually, the thought process is that if developers or other people continued to bid on the property, that they were going to have problems with their other projects in the city with the Economic Development Department, primarily zoning and planning. So they all backed off. And I've had numerous conversations with a lot of them too. And they basically explained the same thing to me. So I just hope that that's not true, Mayor, and that at no time did you ever make those comments to Ms. Lennon. Thank you.
I just want to interject, just because I touched on this earlier, and just picking up on some of the things that were mentioned by Mr. Callahan, and then I'll let Mayor Reynolds address it. And as Mr. Callahan said, he's talk to Attorney Stewart about it, all that stuff. I don't want to interrupt you. Just like I interrupt some of the speakers that were saying things I disagreed with earlier. I just want to contextualize a couple things because they're relevant to those listening. That post was posted 2.5 years ago. That post was posted December of 2022. Since that time, and I'm not going to speak about a private citizen because I just don't feel comfortable doing that, but that person has not reached out to me or the clerk's office, to my knowledge. And we live within a few blocks of each other. The, you alluded to a flyer, as I talked about earlier, you know, as or in campaign season, as the fate would have it. This is the last council meeting before that. And that particular post was circulated on a anonymous, what went out to the households in the city, anonymous, no one took credit for it, flyer that went out, or, you know, mailer that went out. So I think it's historically, we've separated politics, what goes on outside of here on the campaign trail. And by historically, I mean always, even this campaign season, there are people's names here to be on the ballot. 2 years ago, when my cycle was up, previous to that, mayor's races, there's been other contested mayor's races, things like that. We've done our best to do that. So I don't want to set a precedent. Again, everyone has a right to, because I didn't interrupt you, Mr. Callahan. But I do think it just bears mentioning that we're talking about something that happened 2.5 years ago, something that was just, you know, on an anonymous, that no one took credit for distributing it to it. It's a Facebook post, and I'm not questioning the person's credibility, because I'm not, none of us are in a position to say credible or not credible. That's the nature of why we try not to question people's motives on during meetings. It's because who am I to tell any one of you or any one of you to question me what my true motives are? That's just not the way that works. That's why we, you know, try not to make a habit of those things. But in this particular circumstance, just like we heard people advocating for, you know, certain candidates or ways for people to vote, again, I'm not here to stop anybody, but I just think it bears mentioning that. It's a circumstance where, to a degree, and believe me when I say, I always think it's important to try to separate government from politics. And as someone who's elected and sits up here with 7 other elected people, I recognize that. But at the same time, I also recognize the respect that I have for the institution of city council to when I do run for council. I mean, I'm speaking for myself a little bit, but just the privilege that I have getting to sit on the side of the dais, to hold this gavel that I seldom touch, to have a microphone in front of me that I get to say whatever I want to. So I just think it bears for all of us to keep in mind that when we hear, you know, at the next meeting, if my friend posts something about any one of the 7 of you that I question, am I going to come here with it printed out and say, well, you know, this person was witnessed at this establishment behaving this way, I think I need to bring it up here. Because now we're getting into, well, Mr. Clone, how do you know what that is? And again, I'll defer to whatever the conversation goes from here. But I do think it's very important just to recognize that we are talking about something that was referenced as, what's going on? But I do think it's important to recognize we're talking about something that was posted by an individual on Facebook, who, again, I'm not here to question their credibility. It was mentioned, it was posted somewhere, which is a blog post. It's not it's not held to the same standards of journalistic integrity, because that's just not how blogs work. That's not to that particular blog. And you referenced a flyer. It was an anonymous political mailer that went out as part of the politics of the day that are going on. So I will leave it at that. Mr. Mayor?
So, yeah, I would just say,
Chair Italics, did you need something, sir? I don't want to ignore the fact they're standing at the lectern, but you do know we're a new business right now.
I need to respond to accusations just made against me.
There are no accusations made against Mr. Antalis. So I'm going to continue.
Did you ever hear freedom of speech?
I'm going to continue on with the meeting.
I will be brief and just say that, Mr. Callahan, there's a lot of misinformation in there, but as far as any threats or anything like that, like, those words never came out of my mouth, and they're not true. And I can tell you every single conversation I had or anything we did at that point included oftentimes both Ms. Spezial or Mr. Spurk, or both of them, and Mr. Spurk can add to that as well.
Mr.
Yeah, no, I attended those meetings. I was at the meeting.
He's talking to the microphone, please, Mr. Burke.
Yeah, I was at the meeting. I attended the meeting that we're talking about with the realtor in question. And man, never said those legal terms like in the domain or anything like it. I would remember if he started throwing around legal terms. What I was there for, I was the lawyer. So I don't call anything like that. And I think, if you think about it a little bit, if the city was trying to scare off bidders, rival bidders, most of the multimillionaire developers I've run across don't scare easy. Not easily intimidated, not worried about how things they do might look or how they might act. They're pretty audacious. That's how they have to be multimillionaires. So that wouldn't probably have been an approach that would have been very practical. And secondly, major properties here on the south side of Bethlehem, and if you're talking about south side of Bethlehem, the 800-pound gorilla in the room is Lehigh University. If you eliminate the land that used to be owned by Bethlehem Steel, which is now Industrial Parks and Beth Works, I think they own like 70% of their community on the south side. So, again, threatening developers would not have been practical because the main worry would have been it's Lehigh that's going to outbid you. So those are just my observations. And beyond that, I'd be reluctant to get into kind of a deposition of who said what.
Right.
This came up 2.5 years later. I don't know why, but I'm always thinking about the possibility of litigation. And if that should come up, I wouldn't want to have a deposition tonight here about details of who said what. It's just
I just
found it very strange that when any property of those sizes go up for sale, there's multiple developers bidding on them. And they all backed off at a certain point. They were all interested, and then they all backed out at a certain point, every one of them. And none of them put bids in. And the only people that didn't put bids in was Lehigh. And I spoke to people at Lehigh, and he said, David, they don't, this quote, they don't care what the mayor wanted. They'll hang on to their property for 20 years and deal with five more mayors down the road. So that's why they stayed in the bidding process. But,
and that might be why the others got out.
Right. But also, it wasn't an anonymous, it was a pack. A pack. From my understanding, it was a pack out of Philadelphia that supports moderate candidates on the Republican and Democratic side. I forgot the name of the pack. That's what I've heard. It wasn't anonymous. They have to have their name on the pack. But the only other thing I wanted to add was that, according to Ms. Lennon, the resident and business owner, you were in the room, and then after the mayor left, she said to you, "Are you okay with him, you know, saying that?" And I don't think you responded. I think you walked out.
Yeah. Again, I'm not going to do a deposition tonight.
And I agree with that.
Right. I just wanted to get it out there. Because it's out there, and people are asking me about it. And I had heard about it 2 years ago. I wasn't on council, but I just found it at the time that it was very strange, and no one on council even questioned. I mean, he answered it tonight very clearly, right? According to him, it didn't happen. So that, you know, I just think someone on council at that time should have probably asked that question. Did the mayor threaten to use planning and zoning against any developer that stayed in the bidding process? And that's all it was a very simple question. So thank you.
Thank you, everybody. I apologize if I misspoke about the anonymous part, Mr. Callahan. Appreciate you educating me on that. I hope everyone gets home safely. Have a good night.
Thank you.